Joe, introduce yourself if you would. Appreciate you coming.
Joe Arnold, public at large.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Well, we'll turn the time now to the division for our first item tonight is the waterfowl recommendations. Is this Blair?
Yep, it is.
Yeah, thank you. Blair's coming.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Tonight I'll be doing the 2016-2017 hunt recommendations. I wanted to go through and just give a brief update first on our habitat and population conditions. This last year, in 2015, we saw that conditions were a little bit drier overall across North America than in 2014. What that means in terms of waterfowl is that production is usually down a little bit when we do have drier conditions. And so we did have a little bit drier conditions through prairie fowl regions up through Alberta, Saskatchewan, but for the most part, things were quite similar to what they were in the previous year. As far as one condition that we are concerned about is the overall drought that's occurring in California. As you can see, the last couple years, those red splotches indicate lack of water, essentially. And California has been in a very severe drought, which has limited the amount of wintering waterfowl habitat that we have in the Pacific Flyway. We have several agencies, Fish and Wildlife Service, California Department of Wildlife, Ducks Unlimited. We're all concerned about this issue and been working to try to address this issue and redivert water and come up with resources to provide flooded rice and wetlands for waterfowl in the coming years. We are concerned with this, and we'll continue to monitor it, and hopefully that drought will subside in the near future. As far as our waterfowl populations are concerned, ducks are doing great across North America. This last year, our pair counts indicated that we had just shy of 50 million ducks, which is the largest pair count we've ever had on record, so ducks are doing really well. You look at it in terms of specific species. For the most part, things were similar to what they were last year. Overall, most species are well above their long-term average. And the only two, pintail and scaup, that are below their long-term average, and they do have some problems associated with them, but for the most part, everything else is doing really well. Our Canada goose population in the Rocky Mountain region is also doing excellent. We've seen this population growing all across the flyway. Specifically here in Utah, we've seen our numbers looking great for many years now. Our light goose population in the Pacific Flyway is also growing. We've seen them increasing since about the 80s or so, and they continue to trend upward and increasing with each year. And lastly, our tundra swan population, we've also seen great rebounds in the swan population for the last 50 or so years, and they continue to do excellent here as well. So in terms of our seeding package for 2016, it's largely based upon the population of mallards in the western part of North America. We'll be offered again the most liberal package, which is the 107-day season and a bag of seven for this coming year. We have three species that are under species-specific harvest strategies. Those are pintail, canvasback, and scaup. For pintail and canvasback, we can have the longest season and bag that's offered to us, which is 107-day season and a bag of two. For scaup, because their numbers are down, we do have a reduced season length for them, which is only going to be 86 days, and it'll be a bag of three. So our 2016 season will begin on October 1st and run until January 15th. The reduced scaup season will begin also on October 1st and run until the 27th of December. The bag and possession limits for ducks, mergansers, coots, snipe, and falconry will all be what they have been in previous years. We aren't making any significant changes to them this year. Our tundra swan hunt, that'll also begin on the 1st of October until December 11th. And that is confined specifically to the Great Salt Lake hunt area. We can't offer that anywhere else outside of that area. And we'll be offering 2,000 permits again for that hunt. For our goose zones, we had some controversy this last year over the northern goose zones, people that wanted to see some stuff adjusted there. So we sent out a survey to our goose hunters in July this past year, asking them their preference for having splits or changes in the season, as well as looking at modifications that maybe need to be made to the zones. Based on the feedback that we got from that survey, we had an open house in Brigham City in August and took that feedback and essentially reconfigured our northern goose zone based upon the feedback that we received. What we did is we found that most of our people who didn't want to see any changes to the Northern Goose Zone were in the clubs west of Korean area. The remainder of the people who answered the survey about Northern Goose Zone did want to see a split. And so we essentially went and drew a circle around the Northern Goose Zone and also the clubs in the Korean area, as well as the Bear River Bird Refuge. And that provided an opportunity to give those clubs a season that they were looking for, as well as provide a public land area where people who were looking to hunt geese outside of the closed time period could continue to hunt geese on a public land. And we presented this at our open house. Now there was a lot of support from the open house participants. Met the needs of most of the users who answered the survey, and it really provides more opportunity for hunters across the state. By including Bear River Bird Refuge in that area, it gives people 128 days of goose hunting across the state. And so if they are willing to adjust where they're hunting, you can hunt geese for a lot longer than we otherwise would be able to provide. So the season dates for Northern Goose Zone will be October 1st through January 14th. The urban rest of the state zone will have a break during the season. For the urban zone, it'll be for about 3 weeks. And the rest of the state will be for about 8 days. And that'll provide a few more days at the end of the season when goose hunting tends to get better across the state towards the end of January. We also looked at our snow goose, light goose hunt in the state. We had multiple zones for these species as well. And looking at the dates when we actually have light geese in the state, there's really not a reason for that. We found that we could simplify this season by creating everything in one zone and just having season dates when light geese are here in the state. One exception for that would be Millard County, and we are recommending closing that area for a couple weeks. And that is to accommodate the light goose festival that occurs in that area. We're also recommending a change for the age of youth. Many of our other wildlife programs, like Big Game and Upland Game, made this change several years ago. We've been working with the Fish and Wildlife Service to also adjust this to provide a little more opportunity for our younger hunters. We're able to do that this year, so anyone younger than 18 on July 31st will be considered a youth. They will be required, though, during the youth hunt to have a mentor with them, so someone who's 18 or older. And anybody older than 15 will be required to have a federal duck stamp. So the only rule change we'll be making this year is to adjust the age of youth from 15 to 17. And we also had an issue come up in our southern region rack with a buffer around Gunnison Bend Reservoir that was inadvertently added last year when we were making some changes, and so we will need to remove that as well. And those are all of our recommendations, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, appreciate that. Do we have any comments cards on this particular? We do.
We don't, this isn't on that one, but we do
have to vote. Any questions by the RAC? Any questions by those in the audience?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Nobody's going to ask you one, I'll put you on the spot.
Okay.
When you do these bag limits and seasons, how much does the federal fish wildlife have to say on? Do they have to approve these when you do this stuff?
Yeah, so with all these species that we're talking about, they're considered a migratory bird, so they fall under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which essentially gives the Fish and Wildlife Service the ultimate control for those species. We work quite closely with them to try to modify season dates and season lengths to try to accommodate the needs of our hunters in the state, needs we have as a state, and so it's a pretty good relationship, but ultimately it falls back on them to approve or deny the changes that we want to make.
When you say
we, you've got to have their approval. Yep. I've got one real quick. So you're saying that Fish and Wildlife has already approved these bag limits for 2016?
Yep. So they did their process in October of this year, which allows us now to take what they've approved and present that to you guys.
Any other questions by the rep? Questions by the audience? Okay, we'll entertain a motion on this one.
I motion we accept the changes presented by the UWR.
Okay,
Who was it?
David.
Any discussion? Roll call, please, all in favor. Pledge unanimous, Carol. All right, thank you. Thank you. Next up is Justin and Shannon, he's our big game coordinator, and we'll be talking about statewide elk management plan. If you'd like to comment on this one, you haven't got your card in, please put your card. And they're out there on the table, just outside on the backside of that wall right there, and fill it out and give one to us.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Justin Shannon. Tonight I'm going to present the statewide elk plan for 2015. Before I begin, though, this is my first round through the RAC since July when the new RAC members have been appointed to the Northeast region. And I want to say welcome and look forward to working with you in the future. And you have a thankless job, and I'm glad you guys are willing to serve, so thank you very much. To begin, as a way of introduction, this plan provides guidance and direction for managing Utah's elk populations, and it's being proposed as a 7-year plan. And so moving forward, elk recommendations that are made at future RAC meetings will be made in accordance with this plan. Before I get too far down the road, I want to thank the many elk committee members that helped us put this product together. We had representation from many sportsmen organizations, agricultural interests, CWMUs, landowner association representatives, Farm Bureau elected officials, our federal partners, BLM and Forest Service, the public at large, university. We had RAC representation for the Northeast region. It was Dan Abeda. We're fortunate to have Dan with us, and then John Baer with the Wildlife Board. And really, these committee members, we struggled through a lot of elk issues, and they really added a lot of value to the current plan that we're going to propose tonight. So these committee meetings that we held five of them from June 2nd to August 11th, and we spent about 25 hours discussing elk management related issues. And the approach that we took is we took the very first meeting that we had, and we listed what's working well with our current elk management, and then what are some areas that we can improve. And from that area we can improve list, we started to make meaningful changes to the goals, objectives, and strategy section. So that way, if we were going to make changes to the elk plan, it had to alleviate some type of deficiency in our current elk management. So that's the approach that we took, and it really streamlined the process and allowed for some great dialogue. We broke the plan up into three sections, population section, a habitat, and then finally a recreation section. And from there we set goals, objectives, and strategies that would guide us in our elk management decisions. So the first goal that we have in the goal for the population management section is to simply improve management of Utah's elk herds. If we can do better, that's what we want to do with this plan. And often, as along these lines, we didn't necessarily put a firm statewide population objective like the last plan. What we did is we said the sum of the unit plans will be the objective of the statewide plan. And so that way, if you have a given population that has support to either go increase or decrease in the population objective, this plan allows for that. And those decisions are best made at the local level. And whatever those changes are, they'll be reflected in our statewide population objective. So the first objective was to maintain healthy elk populations at biologically and socially sustainable levels. And the strategies that I have listed below, they're not all the strategies in the plan, but I wanted to highlight those that we felt were very meaningful or that were changed from last year to this year. So we want to set objectives and manage elk at appropriate spatial scales that account for migration patterns. And also we want to establish advisory committees to review unit management plans when considering a change in the objective. Also, if drought conditions and high elk densities are negatively impacting habitat, then we would come to the Wildlife Board in August and recommend additional antlerless elk permits. This was clarified in this plan. We didn't have a mechanism like this in the last plan, even though we were doing some of this already. Also, during severe winters, we want to aggressively harvest antlerless elk to minimize conflicts. And they're going to come. I know we haven't had hard winters the last few years, but they're going to come back. And when they do, and elk are congregated on private lands or causing some real challenges, we're trying to be transparent. Our goal is to aggressively deal with those offending elk and alleviate some damage issues. This is new to the plan as well. We want to allow muzzleloader bull hunters to harvest a cow on select units that are over objective. Similar to what we do with the archery season, where if you get an archery permit, you can harvest a bull or a cow without permit. And the way this would work is if you had a given unit that was chronically over objective and throwing more antlerless elk hunters at it may not necessarily add to more hunter success, we thought this might be a good approach to harvest elk with the hunters that are already in field. And then finally, for this section, we want to increase the number of general season cow elk a hunter may harvest annually. In the last plan, it was two. We're looking to increase that. But with that, we want to keep in mind that only one cow elk permit could be obtained through the public draw each year. Moving on to objective two, we want to do a better job of fostering support among stakeholders for Utah's elk management program. Some ways we can do this is to address all depredation problems in a timely and efficient manner, and in so doing, potentially increase tolerance from landowners for elk populations. We also want to do a better job of communicating between the division and the various stakeholders that we have with the elk effect. And then finally, increase tolerance of public land grazers by conducting habitat projects that are going to benefit livestock, elk, and other wildlife. Third objective for the population section is to achieve a proper distribution of elk on private and public lands. One thing that the Elk Committee was excited about, and the Division of Wildlife is as well, is we want to create a private lands only permit that would encourage and target cow elk harvest on private lands. And what this would look like is, again, if you had a unit, say the Wasatch unit for instance, what we'd do is we would issue a set amount of private lands only permits that are valid within the boundaries of that unit, and then those elk can be harvested on private lands and not public lands. And the goal is to get hunting pressure where it needs to occur. As we disrupt elk on private lands and harvest them there, we can grow them on public land, which will be a benefit to the public hunter. We also want to investigate an incentive program for landowners to qualify for bull elk permits based on cow harvest. It would go hand in hand with this private lands only permit. And then we also want to review eligibility requirements for landowner incentive programs to increase cow elk harvest and or improve elk distribution. Moving on to habitat, the goal is to conserve and improve elk habitat throughout the state. The first objective is to maintain sufficient habitat to support the elk herds that we have and reduce competition for forage between elk and livestock. One way we want to do this is to continue to treat 40,000 acres of elk habitat annually. We want to do projects in good areas that are going to benefit elk. And we also want to continue the momentum we have with the Watershed Restoration Initiative partners to identify ideal spots to do restoration projects. And there's a lot of momentum with this right now. It's a great partnership where we treat a lot of acres that benefit deer and elk, and we want to continue on with that effort. We also want to promote let burn policies in appropriate areas that are going to benefit elk and reseed post wildfires, and then support programs such as conservation easements that are going to incentivize private landowners to keep elk habitat managed as rangeland. Second objective under habitat is to reduce adverse impacts of elk and elk habitat. So we want to continue to work cooperatively with UDOT. They've done a great job in highway fencing, underpasses, overpasses, those types of things that keep elk off our roads, keep us safe, keep elk safe, and we want to continue that momentum as well. And then finally, coordinate with land management agencies and energy developers on oil, gas, and mining mitigation. Moving on to recreation, the goal here is to enhance recreation opportunities for hunting and viewing elk throughout the state. And the first objective is to maintain a diversity of elk hunting opportunities. So what that would look like for general season units is to continue to issue 15,000 statewide spike permits And with that, similar to the last plan, if harvest is greater than 20% statewide, those permits will be reduced to 14,000 the following year. Additionally, we want to issue 15,000 any bull permits. This is an increase of 700 from the last plan, but we've grown elk on any bull units since 2009, and so it's a modest increase for these permits. We want to continue to issue unlimited archery permits that are valid both on spike and any bull units. Keep that program going. And then one that we're excited about is to investigate a dedicated hunter program for elk. We have these for deer, and this would be a real fun and beneficial program to look at for our elk hunters. Moving on to limited entry, there were no changes in the age categories. We're still managing for a 4.5 to 5-year-old bull all the way up to a 7.5 to 8-year-old bull. And the one thing that this committee did with the division is we took every limited elk unit in the state and we set an age objective to it. And we did that for a variety of reasons. The first being so we can seek some level of balance between quality and opportunity on these limited entry units. And we also took some things into consideration as we did this. The first was population size. It seems like populations of elk that were high tended to be in the 5.5 to 6 age category, and that's simply because one of the issues that was brought up with the elk committee was point creep, and what point creep is where you get more applicants than going into the system than permits that are going out of the system each year, so it gets harder and harder to draw a permit, and so that was on the minds of us and the elk committee, and so that's where population size comes into account. Also, interchange with neighboring units. Some elk really don't respect the arbitrary boundary that we gave them on a map, and sometimes they move to the neighboring one, and so when we see a lot of interchange like that, we wanted those age objectives to be closer together, and they generally tend to be lower, the 5.5 to 6-year-old age class as well. Access to elk, some units are well roaded, others are very remote. Seems like those that are difficult to get to the elk tended to be managed for higher age objectives, and then proximity to urban areas. Wasatch Front has a lot of any bull and lower age class objectives throughout, whereas your more remote populations of the state tended to be managed for a little bit higher. Some other considerations, talked about point creep a little bit, but that was a big driver in a lot of this. The management of neighboring states and tribes, private land dynamics, and then simply the history of these individual units. So with that, the changes that are being made are on the far left. The units that are in green represent increases from the last plan to this one, and those in yellow represent decreases. And so the first recommendation for the plan is the South Cache. We want to recommend that go from a 4.5 to 5-year-old unit to a 6.5 to 7-year-old unit. One reason we do is, as we talked about northern Utah and northern Utah hunting opportunities, there wasn't really a quality unit until you started going further south. And so it was something that we felt comfortable with, the elk committee did as well, and we want to reinstate a little bit more quality up on that South Cache unit. The Deep Creeks, again, fit the description of one of these higher age class categories, and it helps with some of the concerns out there to increase quality. And then the next three, the Mountain Dutton, Panguitch Lake, and Monroe, they tend to go hand in hand. Those are those yellow units at the center bottom part of the map. What we had in the past is the Monroe was managed for a 7.5 to 8-year-old unit, whereas Panguitch Lake and Mount Dutton were managed for 5.5 to 6. And so we had a 2-year age difference in neighboring units where we know we have interchange. And so we wanted to split the difference, bring the Monroe down 1 year and bring those other units up a year, and have a more fluid and even age distribution throughout that area. And then we recommend a decrease in the age objective on Pilot Mountain to 4.5 to 5. How permits will be recommended? There wasn't a change from the last plan to this plan. Still 25% of permits will go to archery, 60% rifle, and 15% muzzleloader. And then on appropriate limited entry units, we wanted to provide a mid-season and or a late-season rifle elk hunt to increase hunter opportunity or improve hunter distribution. One of the things that this would look like with the mid-season is this mid-season hunt will overlap the general season spike elk hunt. And so for those that aren't familiar, in the past we've had an early season that is essentially middle of September when the bulls are in the rut, and then later middle of November, which is your quintessential late season hunting opportunity. And this mid one is to provide an additional hunt that would overlap the spike hunt, where these limited entry rifle hunters would be competing with spike and cow elk hunters. It's not as great a hunt as the other ends, but it provides that opportunity. And the why behind this is there was concerns from many members of the elk committee that we're harvesting our bulls pretty heavy in September and pretty early in the year. And so we wanted to spread that distribution out a little bit. And in some ways you could do that is by adding more hunts and throwing more tags in there and potentially impacting draw odds for these hunts as well, depending on how it goes. Also, another minor change is if you're going to have a late hunt, then no more than 60% of your permits can be in that early rifle hunt. In the last plan, that was 65%. And again, we lowered that a little bit to shift more of the permits from the early to the later hunts to spread that out a little bit. And maybe I need to clarify something here. It's probably more appropriate for the next presentation, but just to be clear, the RAC memo that I sent out, there was an oversight on my part, and I apologize for that. I know Dax took some phone calls. But when we talk about these hunts overlapping the spike hunt, just to be clear, the Diamond Mountain, we are not proposing a spike hunt on the Diamond Mountain. I didn't do a good enough job clarifying that. So that's, if you came here tonight thinking that that was our intent, it's not. We're not making any changes to the Diamond Mountain spike hunt. We're not proposing it. This is more reflective to the other units throughout the state where that spike hunt is prominent. So hopefully that helps, if that's why you came tonight to talk about that. Objective two, we want to increase opportunities for viewing elk while educating the public and concern the needs of elk management and habitat. Want to use social media and other media outlets a little bit better to explain what we're doing and why, and highlight the importance of programs like the conservation permit, expo permits, watershed restoration, and just general permit sales to show where that money comes from to improve elk habitat. So in summary, the plan is going to provide direction and guidance for elk management over the next 7 years. And if I had to sum the plan up in one bullet point, it would be this. That the plan aims to provide wildlife biologists more tools to manage to objective, to better distribute these elk on their units, and provide recreational hunting opportunities. And again, I can't thank those committee members enough that came and contributed and made this plan much, much better than it would have been had I just sat down and wrote it. So, very appreciative to those that served. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. I guess I got a question for you.
Sure.
Was the last plan, was it a five-year plan or was it a seven-year plan also?
No, the last plan was a five-year plan.
This one is a seven-year
plan. It'll be a seven-year plan, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, question by the rec. Mitch?
On your targeted habitat projects for your elk, on your sage chicken areas for targeting, are you going to be able to use the same habitat plans, or you got all of them? Or can you even do any habitat programs?
What do you mean exactly?
On your sage chickens, you know, we specified for certain targeted areas on sage chickens. I know I haven't even talked about, you know, some brush control and everything to help with grass. Have you got that same type of issue as far as your habitat projects? Are they compatible with the sage chicken?
Yeah, I think in some cases, I guess I'd answer that by saying we manage sage grouse and elk. And so, you know, we're not going to manage elk to the detriment of our sage grouse. And so as we go through habitat restoration projects, whether it's the location or the type of project, we would consider sage grouse on that. I mean, it wasn't something that was brought up in the plan, but our habitat biologists are really conscious of impacts to other species and things like that. And so we would be doing projects that would benefit elk, but not necessarily at the detriment of sage grouse. Does that help?
Right. I guess my concern was that maybe some areas you wouldn't be able to do the type of habitat projects you've been doing, mm-hmm. you know, the benefit mainly elk, which is good for wildlife. The sage chicken has not made you divert from the habitat programs.
To my knowledge, no, I don't know if there's a habitat biologist. But I mean, to my knowledge, I don't see much change in our habitat restoration efforts for elk because of sage grass.
Been tweaked certain areas of sage chicken.
Yeah, I think we'd be conscious. I don't think we'd go treat a leg or something like that right on there. But we've got with PJ encroachment and all that, we've got plenty of battles to fight where we don't have to overlap the sage grass areas. So there's plenty of habitat to be treated. So.
Right.
I have a couple of comments and then one I need clarification on.
Sure.
One issue on the overlapping spike plants that was maybe not brought up as a benefit. Somebody could theoretically take their family hunting and everybody could have a tag if they chose to put in that limited entry tag. The family could buy spike tags, correct? It wouldn't be the two hunt limit.
Yeah.
The two tag limit. So that would be maybe a major benefit for some people that need a developer.
Correct. So if a hunter drew a limited entry permit and it was for that mid-October season, then those in his or her party or family members could also get spike tags. Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know what, we didn't talk about that much, but that really is, that's a good point.
Another just comment, some of the landowners maybe don't want full tags, and maybe they're not hunters.
Mm-hmm.
In Wyoming, they have a voucher system,
mm-hmm.
where if you shot on your land, you get a portion of the money.
Yeah.
So that might be some other thought there. And then I'd like some clarification on the chronically overpopulated cow hunts that you were talking about doing either sex muzzle or mm-hmm. we already have control tags on most of them units, don't we? So they already can shoot cows if they have two tags?
Yeah, in some cases you have that. It's, you know, it's just an additional management tool. And so if it's, if you had an area that you didn't want to go full-blown antlerless elk control permit, but you were saying we need some late harvest. I mean, a lot of our elk have migration issues where they're coming in to certain areas later in the year and things like that. It's just a way to get some additional November harvest without throwing more cow elk hunters on top of each other. So,
unit by unit,
yeah.
Discussion then?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a broad statement.
I don't think so. I can't even think of a unit right now that we would try this on for next year. Maybe I'll get the feedback from the biologist, but again, it's the spirit of this plan was to help give biologists and wildlife managers as many tools possible as they need to get to objective. And so if a biologist says, this is what I need for unit X, let them do it by all means.
Thank you. I've got a question. On the dedicated hunter program, doing that with deer, what is the response from the public and from what biologists have seen? What's the benefit there as far as just more opportunity to harvest all three seasons? Is the quality better, worse?
Specifically for deer, for elk?
For elk.
Okay,
because
for elk.
Tried this with deer, right?
Yeah.
And I think it took off pretty well. I don't know where it's at now. It's still a popular program or not.
It's growing in demand. There's a lot of hunters applying for the dedicated hunter program. And I think as it gets harder and harder to draw a deer permit, they're doing that. Elk probably doesn't have the same pressures because you could just go buy a spike permit. You could just go buy an inner bull permit. So those pressures aren't the same. And it's not a proposal we're taking tonight, so it's just thinking down the road. But what this might look like is you can hunt all three seasons with one of these permits for spikes or any bulls, and maybe even having the conversation about hunting spike or any bull units for those select dedicated hunters. So that way they wouldn't have to choose which half of the state they want to hunt in, and they have a lot of flexibility with their weapon types. So.
I've got a question. I guess my question would be more law enforcement based. Randy, what, having this mid-season October hunt, we have spike hunters hunting with limited entry big bull hunters, what kind of a problem is that going to create law enforcement wise?
Law enforcement wise, it would add substantial, probably waste of time on our part. We get, especially in the units like the Wasatch, we get a lot of calls where individuals have shot branch antler bulls with spike tags. I think in 2015, we spent over 300 hours investigating this little call. If we had that in the same units, we definitely would have we spend a lot of time trying to educate the public and have them call us in those units if they see somebody taking a branch out of the bowl. And if we had both those hunts going, you know, limited entry hunters would be getting called in. So it'd be an inconvenience for them, us investigating them for no reason, it'd be a waste of time. Also, it would confuse the public as far as we've been telling them for years to call us if they see that happening. And now, you know, if they called us because that was happening, we'd be telling them, you know, don't call us. And we'd probably end up missing calls some because of that also. Word would get out that there's a limited entry hunt going on. And individuals that would shoot branch antler bulls on spike tags may not get called in for that reason also. I think last year, I'm the sergeant for the Tabiona district, which included part of the Wasatch Unit. I think we had 14 illegal kills documented this last year alone. So it's, you know, and that's just a percentage of what's going to be, you know, we're probably looking at less than 50% of actual, you know, people seeing something like that and being willing to call in. So it substantially affects, you know, people wanting to call in if we did that probably. Is that?
That's exactly what I'm looking for, yeah.
Thank you.
I've got one more, Randy.
Yeah.
So with this plan, oh, I'm sorry, I was meaning that, Randy. Sorry. With this plan, I know it'll get covered in the next portion of this, but what areas of focus on the general season units would them cow elk hunts coincide during the late season?
Yeah, we have four of them, and off the top of my head, it would be the, let me back up. This plan, what you're voting on now, just says, should we have or not. But in the next presentation, they would be the Plateau Thousand Lakes, the Pont Sagan, the Grouse Creek, and there's one other one.
Deep Creek.
The Deep Creek, thank you. And then with that, in the memo, I also put Diamond Mountain, and I put it because that's the season dates, that those season dates would occur there, but it wouldn't overlap that spike time. So it would be four that we would recommend trying this on to see what the issues are.
Yeah. But then could grow to any unit in the state, right?
Yeah, what we wanted to do with it is because, I mean, Randy brought up some really great points as to some, wildlife management is difficult because there's always pros and cons to every decision made, and Randy brought up some really good points with the law enforcement. The goal isn't to necessarily add to their workload or foul them up. It's to try this small and see if we can't move some of that pressure, move some of those permits. And I'm really eager, if it passes the racks and board, to get that feedback both from the hunters to say, yeah, this is something we didn't like. I think that feedback is really important to our biologists and managers, but also take into account, what type of strife did this cause for law enforcement? Was this a major workload? Was it a real problems? That type of stuff. And so start slow, get that feedback, make decisions down the road. So.
Thank you.
just to clarify, Justin, for those four units you just mentioned, currently all four of those units already have an early and a late season.
Correct.
So this would be a third one in the middle there.
Yeah.
Correct.
I'd have to double check Grouse Creek, but certainly on the other ones, yes, that would be the case.
Other questions on the rep? You want to come on up to the mic here and state your name?
Alan Daddy. He just didn't mention anything about this magnification on muzzleloaders. Is that coming up?
It's coming up a little bit later today.
Okay, that's my question.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? Yep, come on up. Go ahead, come on up, Mike, and state your name.
Hi, Real. Hey, Big One. Daniel and Randy kind of touched on what I wanted to touch on, and that's what these my family personally turned in a few calls on people on like Wasatch Unit out in the Book Cliffs during the spike hunt, killing the bigger bulls. And I'm afraid that with people that's got the spike tags, they know that there's a limited entry hunt going on. it's going to be just that much more tempting because the only difference is the number on the tag. Because we ain't going to know whether they got a spike tag or a bull tag, and it's just going to be that much more tempting to get these orange tag bulls. And another thing I want to touch on is we need to clarify on this elk control cow tags. Because there's a lot of the general public and a lot of the game wardens that think that you can go statewide on. I know a lot of people that killed their antlerless on that control tag out in the book.
Is there a question? This is a question for you.
And is there any way that we can clarify that to the general public and to your law enforcement that there's only certain areas that you can use that elk control unit?
Yeah, it's stated in our guidebook very clearly, and then also there's a link on our website that all you got to do is Google search anything antlerless elk control permit. The thing that pops up is areas of the state that the boundaries of that antlerless elk control permit exist.
But it's also your law enforcement that thinks it can go statewide.
Well, I can't speak to that. But if we need to have some deeper internal conversations, more than happy to do that. So if there's misinformation occurring, we'll do a better job in our shop with that down the road. But yeah, I apologize if you had misinformation. So.
But that would be, like I said, with the spike tags and this is mid-season, I don't think it's a good idea. There ain't no way that we can know for sure is there whether they're limited entry or spike tags. And like Randy said, you ain't going to have as many people turning in what could be a possible coach. So I guess it would be good.
We've got you covered up on the comments.
All right.
My bad.
Yeah.
Any other questions from the public? I don't see any. Okay. With that in mind, we'll go to comments by the public. I've only got one card. Does anybody else want to fill out a card?
No,
I've got the one card. Tyrell, I had yours. Do you want to get back up? Or
no, you're good. I just touched on what I wanted to. I think I got my point across.
All right, thank you.
Thank you,
I'll
sir.
Comment on the next section. Is that all right?
Yep. Give us a card to fill out. Throw that one. Get one of these cards filled out. They're right on the table outside there. Oh, you got one. All right. Very good. Well, discussion by the rack.
I tend to have some agreement with the commentator on parts of this proposal, but I like most of the proposal. Is there any way that we can vote on parts of it and exclude parts of it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. I have to second that. I truly think that in a consensus, that's no different than a holding an open season 2-point tag during the limited entry rifle season. You're gonna open up party hunting like crazy. You're not gonna know who shot what. I personally don't think that. I think there's room for opportunity somewhere after, whether it's later in December or January season timeframes. But I don't think the overlapping should occur.
As far as the overlap in the elk management plan itself,
yep,
should be taken
out. That's how I feel about it.
Season. That overlap the units.
You know, we're relying on our sportsmen. We're relying on our sportsmen to hold each other honest. And I feel that we're not giving them that opportunity because they're the ones turned in. It's easy to identify whether it's a branch antler bull killed during spike season or not. And to reach out and ask for their help on this, that's kind of defeating the purpose in my eyes.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, but we've got people waiting 18 years to get an elk tag. And they're getting old, and they're getting 70, 55, and they can't. They're worried about getting a tag before they're too old to hunt.
Sure.
And if they chose to take a lesser tag, this would be an opportunity. They realize it probably wouldn't be as good a tag.
Well, and that's where I recommend it, doing it later in the year, say December or January.
But they. And that might be an option also, but the older crowd needs somebody to go with them, to help. And this would be an opportunity in the middle of the winter, to do that. I don't know. It's just my thought. going to help everybody else draw a limited entry also if they're going to go out of the point three.
So they have them go in like areas where they call them out, boundary.
If you would step up the mic, state your name, and go ahead and ask a question.
I'm Bryant Jackson. I was just wondering if they could let the elderly people find some problem areas where the elk are coming down in the fields like later in the year. Like the boundary, the women's entry areas.
See, and that's where I feel that later in the year, the elk are going to congregate lower than areas and condense. So you're going to have more opportunity, in my opinion, than having the pressure from that many other public, because right now we don't restrict where them spike hunters can hunt. We sell 15,000 tags, they can go to one unit. They can go to this unit or that unit. And quality or not, I mean, I know it's going to be a lesser opportunity tag, but hunting later in the year would be too. Dan, did you guys talk about other opportunities for the elderly?
I don't recall having those discussions.
Seems the plus side is too that they the bulls are gathering back up in the later this time of year, and they're all getting back into their bachelors.
So we have another question back here. Yep, in the orange hat. Come on, do it, please.
My name is Austin Burton. I was wondering why we have an issue with the overlap. They have an issue with this cold. I mean, I did the muzzleloader on it. It's 8 degrees. Imagine if I was 65, I wouldn't want to be out at 8 degrees hiking around. I understand that. Why can't we do a similar hunt kind of in between there? Is there no time between the end of September to the 1st of November that we can add this mid-season hunt?
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot of feedback on that because having two managed seasons for the same species difficult to manage, as Randy pointed out. Or if you have multiple seasons, we already do it during the early season muzzleloader, limited entry bull elk. Was there ever discussion about doing it during the rifle deer season?
Yeah, there was. To answer the question, no, there's really not a 9-day window in between the early rifle and the late rifle hunt without having an overlap of your general season deer, your spike hunt, or your muzzleloader elk and your muzzleloader deer season. So, it's something we certainly wrestled with, and how do we figure it out? Is this a good option for us? The one thing I would say is we have hunts right now where we have deer hunts that overlap elk hunts. We have cow elk hunts that overlap bull hunts. So we have a lot of this already, and it hasn't been crazy detrimental in those ways. And so we've kind of opened that bag.
So with this plan, it has nothing to do with dates, right? That's the next portion.
Yeah, if you want to tackle this issue in this plan, probably the best place to do it, if I can go back to it, would be, where are we at? It would probably be to deal with this strategy. You know, that strategy that talks about on appropriate limited entry units provide a mid-season and or late-season opportunity. You know, it doesn't set dates, but it just says, here's the concept that we're trying to provide. And so, you know, if you think this isn't a good fit for elk management and you want to address it in the plan, this is probably the best spot to do that. So.
But not on a seasonal basis.
Well, yeah, because we don't tie our seasons in there. You know, the next presentation will be season-specific, like these units will have these season dates and these hunting opportunities. So just trying to add clarity to whether you want to deal with it now or in the next one. So however you guys want to.
We dealt with it here. They would be asking the main thing to modify the plan or take it out of the plan, whereas the next time, during the next item, you're just doing the season dates, right?
Correct. So, yeah, and the way we structured this is because they're both being presented the same night is we wanted to go the plan route first. If there's parts of the plan that the rack fields need to be altered or voted against, you would have that understanding before we moved on to individual seasons and those types of dates. So, you know, you could adjust accordingly in the next presentation.
Okay. We've got a question. Could you stand up and mic there and state your name?
Eli Jackson, and I was wondering where
what's your name?
Spike Hunt.
Eli Jackson.
Where the Spike Hunt overlaps the limited entry draw in the book clips already, correct? Last year.
Say that again.
It doesn't.
No.
Archery. During archery.
Yeah. Archery.
Okay, even archery though. The people that's put in for a year, 19 years or whatever, and drew the tag. What's your feedback then on the intrusion or the disruption of the spike hunters coming in and trying to coincide with a premium tag?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
If you have overlapping season dates, your limited entry trophy hunts virtually.
Sure.
Person and a spike hunt happening at the same time, you're doubling or increasing the number of people buzzing around, disrupting
everywhere.
Yeah, scattering the elk everywhere. When if I had waited 19 years and found an elk and went after it and had somebody come in and shoot a spike and run my trophy bull over the ridge.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
How's the response been for that?
Because
they
have to bring archery already.
Okay. Yeah, so with archery, it's different, though. I mean, we have to have, we provide general season hunting opportunity with archery and limited entry, and the last 7 days of that general season archery hunt is shut down for them. So that way, the week closest to the rut, that's all limited entry hunters. And so the way that we've mitigated that is with the longer season. I mean, those hunters have quite a long time to spend a field, and no doubt it's going to happen. There's competition on the landscape with hunters, and it could be limited entry and limited entry, or general season and limited entry. But the way we've gone about dealing with that is giving those limited entry archery hunters the last week by themselves.
So in this plan, is it addressing archery or
rifle?
Yeah.
With the overlapping dates. Yeah. Or am I confused? Aren't they talking about overlapping?
We're talking about doing it moving forward, though.
So what's your expected with the rifle response on that, I guess, from the sportsman group?
Well, what my expected response would be that mid-season hunt wouldn't be nearly as good as the early or the late, but that's by design. Because if you have 19 bonus points, you probably shouldn't be putting in for that mid-hunt. You should be putting in for the early or the late. And the way we'd go about that is, as you're putting in for that hunt, we would have hunters check a box that says, please acknowledge that there will be general season spike elk hunting and cow elk hunting occurring at this time. And so if you have a few elk points and you're just waiting until you can put back in for deer or whatever that's going to be, and you don't want to switch weapon types, this is a hunt that has lower quality, but you're likely to be able to draw it with fewer points. Hey, Randy, point of clarification, where are we at? I mean, I thought we were in RAC discussion. Did we move back to questions, or what are we doing?
I think we kind of did. We kind of stepped back.
Okay. I mean, I don't mind doing this, but I'm just curious process-wise.
Yeah, we didn't have any questions, but it sounds like we got a few now.
So. Okay, fair enough.
Sorry, my bad.
Jesse McCable, my name. Quick question, maybe Clint or Maxwell will answer as well. When your spike tag numbers, what place in your limited entry numbers, do you guys have any thing where you're seeing a decrease in the quality of bulls out there because of that spike tag and those bulls being pulled out?
Yeah.
And I've heard, I know I have my opinion, and that would be yes, I think it is going to affect it in the long run on your, you know, on your trophy units. I think you're going to start seeing a decrease in quality of bulls with that spike tag continue.
Hang on a second.
Do they have any, have they noticed a decrease in quality yet, or is there kind of an idea there with killing them spikes, you know?
Yeah, so the way we manage our limited entry bulls is to an age objective. And so on the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek South, our three-year average is 7.4, which is exceeding the 6.5 to 7-year-old age objective that we have there. And then on the roadless area, it's 7.4 as well, which is slightly below the 7.5 to 8-year-old unit. And so as we talk about where are we at relative to quality, for our metrics, we look at where are we at in relation to that age. And as far as like quality on scoring and that stuff, I couldn't speak to that. I don't know if Dax or Clint have an opinion that way, but age objective wise, we're still right there, and in some cases exceeding with the spike hunts that are occurring. So.
Jamie Dax, or I don't know if they do have, you know, I think in the future you're going to see your quality go down because of that spike hunt.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. Maybe they'll share that as well.
All right, thank you. Appreciate that. Those comments and questions.
We got one more question.
We still got a little discussion to go on.
No,
so.
We got one more question from the public.
The audience.
Oh, please come up.
Thank you, Jesse, for your. I didn't have a question, since all these other questions come up that I do. On the 15,000 spike tag you sell statewide, you stated here earlier that if the success ratio of 15,000 is over 20%. It would reduce the number sold the next year to 14,000.
Correct.
How do you allocate those? Would you go to a drawing? Would you be first come, first serve? Are you going to just decide who gives the 14,000? There's probably going to be about 100 out there, one of them can't get.
Sure. No, it's a great question. So with the 15,000 permits that we have now, it's all over the counter. There's not an allocation process, right, or it's a draw. And so if statewide, say we hit, I mean, last year we were at 13% success. Say this next year, it's everybody gets into them and we're at 21%, 22%, 23%. What we would do is next year, instead of allocating 15,000 over-the-counter permits, we would just allocate 14,000.
Would then be on first come, first serve?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, there wouldn't be a change to that. First come, first serve.
First come, first serve. That's
okay, great.
Come on up.
I was just wondering, why couldn't you do the other duck hunt like early September? Then the only thing you'd really be messing with is the archery, instead of having all the problem with the spike and identifying whether it was legally taken or not.
So you would say have that early hunt overlap the archery hunt in earlier September?
Yeah, and then yeah. It would still be big bull elk.
Sure.
It would be branch antlered, and then yeah. You wouldn't have a problem. Why would, is that anything that
yeah.
we
consider? Well, yeah. Let me back up and explain the why we're doing this, because it seems like we're just changing for change's sake, and that's not necessarily the case. When we asked the committee what are the issues with our current management, their answer was we're harvesting way too many bulls in September, early August, September, before the breeding, before a lot of that stuff, and so they were wanting to push a lot of those permits later into the year. And so if we had another rifle hunt earlier in September, I don't think that would necessarily alleviate the issue that the committee had brought up. So that would be the reason.
All right, thank you. All right, back to the discussion by the rep.
Yeah, I've got a comment. So there are a lot of pros and cons either way, and we struggled with it as a committee. We struggled with this. It wasn't that, I wouldn't say it was unanimous. Would you say, Justin? I mean,
no.
There was a lot of discussion. In fact, it went out into the next meeting. with this, I mean, it's something that would be kind of the way I came away from our efforts there in revising the statewide plan was, it's kind of a trial basis. We're talking about four units statewide. None of those units are in this region. If it were to be passed and we'll go to the wildlife board and be passed, how long would this potentially could this take? I mean, like a year, two, three, before, if it wasn't working out, what would happen there as far as on a trial basis?
Realistically, probably 2 years. And the reason I say two is not because we don't want to be responsive, but if we try it for the fall of 2016, we'll know our law enforcement concerns pretty early that year, but we won't get the hunter harvest results, we won't get the survey results back, all that stuff, until later into December, January, after the board meeting, after the RACSIN board meetings have occurred. And you know, on all these surveys we do, there's a comment section on tell us about your hunt, were you successful, all that stuff. But that information from the hunters is something that I'm extremely interested in, because as a wildlife agency, we're trying to provide quality hunting opportunities for the hunting public, and if if the response isn't great, why would we continue it? It wouldn't make sense, but
sure.
One of these deals you don't know unless you try, and you were part of that committee. A lot of it was, you know, division, think outside the box. We're always saying try something new and be thinking about these types of things, and that's all we're trying to do tonight, so.
I got some clarification I'd like to ask real quick.
Sure.
So with the 100% allocation between archery rifle and muzzleloader, is it going to be based on management needs?
Or yeah.
Are you looking at opportunity? And basically what I'm asking is, will them permits come out of the rifle pool for the early or late rifle seasons, or will they be added based on management?
Yeah, let me try to tackle it. If I don't answer it correctly, holler at me. Because, so how it works, when we're setting the number of permits, the total number of permits is based on where we're at relative to the age objective we're managing for. And so that drives whether we increase or decrease them. And so it's independent of this breakdown. But say you had a unit that warranted 100 permits. 25 of them would be archery, 60% rifle, and 15% muzzleloader. And then if you had a late season hunt, we're only talking about those 60 permits. From there, those would be distributed between the early, late, or early, mid, and late, depending on the hunt. And so that's kind of how that breakdown occurs. Was that helpful?
So I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. Right here, we're talking about the plan is you're requesting as a tool, as a wildlife agency to manage the wildlife, is to allow one more hunt. It's a limited entry.
Yeah.
That's the whole purpose of the plan, is to say, hey, we want approval to, if we need, to have one more hunt.
Yeah, and it's about, is the need to pull those permits out of the early rifle, and this is a tool that we can use. And we knew going into it that there would be pros and cons and good discussion. And I'm actually grateful for the questions, because if our public processes are not getting us to this level of dialogue and looking at the plan and these issues in the manner we are tonight, it's not working. So I'm glad we're getting the scrutiny that it's getting. So it's healthy.
But I was curious, has this been presented to the other regions already? And if so, what was kind of was there a consensus, or what was the feedback you're receiving from other regions if you've had this already?
Yeah, I hope I don't get any of this wrong, because I'm just going off memory. But the elk plan has passed every region, with one minor correction in the southeast region where they wanted a little bit more opportunity for youth and stuff, and so that was their recommendation. But on this, we haven't had the level of discussion that we've had tonight in any of the other racks. It's gone through pretty well, a concern here or there, but nothing like tonight.
Is this the last region then?
Tonight's the last ride, yeah.
Any other discussion by RAC? I'm ready to entertain a motion then if we so feel like one.
I motion that we go ahead and accept the elk plan as presented.
Okay.
And I'll second that.
Is going to accept second. Any major motion? Other discussion?
I feel that we need the opportunity for where we can manage the season dates and another portion of this. I feel that it's a good plan. But I think we need to consider the season dates and where it coincides.
Okay.
I'd like to say that I would like to also consider the spike hunts during the limited entry hunts. Most of the feedback I hear from the public are a guy that does wait 17 years to draw something to have that overlap spike during that time. And I think the only people that are happy about it are the spike hunters. So it's none of the guys that are waiting a long time to draw those. We just discussed, I'm not sure if there's enough information. I don't know how long you've been doing spike hunts. The age class is where it needs to be now, but has it been going long enough to to be able to tell what that age class is going to be in the future, because you've only been doing spike hunts for a small amount of time.
We've been doing spike hunts since at least 2009.
In the limited entry?
Yeah.
But not in our region.
Statewide, 2009. And even before then, we tried them on the Manti. We tried, where's Sky Wallace at? Yeah, I mean, we had some Keystone units where we tried it and said, is it going to knock the quality on its tail? And it has, and it's worked.
What about?
All right, we've got a motion and a second. We can either vote on that one, or we can amend it.
I propose that we strike the mid-season overlap of the spike from the entry to begins. That's the only thing that I disagree with.
Other than that, great.
So, are you going to amend the motion then?
That would be my amendment to it. To the motion that was made is that that we don't mix any limited entry and spike guns.
I'll second that amendment.
Okay. Well, that's the vote that's out there now. Further discussion? Daniel Davis, in the second.
Yeah.
Any other discussion? You can amend the amendment if you want to. All right. All in favor?
No, just make sure I'm clarified. So
we're voting on
as presented, but removing the mid-season
overlap.
Yes. Right? So we're removing this mid-season hunts will overlap?
Yes.
That's the bullet what we're removing in this motion, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So the first motion no longer...
Yeah,
first motion is no longer valid.
If this is a substitute motion, the first motion drops. And so the first motion will drop out, and the substitute motion takes over. And then you would vote on the substitute motion, and it can either, go one way or the other. And then if it fails, then we do it over again.
Do we re-vote on the first motion?
Yes.
No.
And we can stay here all night.
The motion out there is, from the way I understand it, is that we accept the plan, everything else in the plan, with the exception of this second bullet on there, the overlapping hunts, would be the only thing.
Is that completely remove the mid-season, or just remove the overlap?
Yeah. So
keep the mid-season, but say no overlapping.
The way he presented it was that there was not one that has mid-season overlapping. So you have to remove.
Folks, please keep down. Thank you.
I think you have to remove the mid-season to not have the overlap. You get run more permits early and late to get your quotas. But personally, I don't think it's a good idea to have that people out shooting spikes and then proposals. And I think it's a law enforcement nightmare. And it's also, it would lead to party money, if you will. If your buddy's got a big bull tag and you're out there with the spike tag, the temptation would be pretty great, I think.
All right, that's our motion. It's been second. We can either make a substitute motion, or we can, anybody so inclined?
So when you say substitute motion,
first motion's kind of off the table, and we're doing with the second motion now.
So when you propose the second motion,
when you seconded.
But then when he went into deeper clarification about any season, we're talking just the general spike season only, not the ability for rifle deer season or anything like that, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, this is the elk plan, the elk management plan. Yep.
But just the during spike season portion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that bottom bullet up there, I think it's what we're talking about, mid-season ups, overlap the general season spike.
Yeah, there's no spike cutting on the limited entry unit going on at the same time.
So you're saying you won't be pulling out the spike completely during, because that's already going on?
Just during.
No.
Okay, just during the limited hunt. Okay, I think I got it.
You think you got it?
Yeah, I think I've got it. I think I understand his motion.
Randy, could you just state what the substitute motion is?
Yes.
Just want some file.
The substitute motion, as I understand it, is that we accept the elk management plan as it's been presented, with the exception of that last line on that, the mid-season hunt, and overlap the general season spike cut, that we don't allow that to happen.
That's correct.
What is that mid-season hunt? What time frame are we talking about?
They haven't established it yet. Yep. This is a proposal, right?
Yeah, and that would mean if there's a limited entry going on the limited entry unit, you would not be able to have a mid-season hunt for spike on that unit. Okay? Is that understood?
But there could be a mid-season hunt.
Sometime
later on,
yeah,
like in, I think, December, or when you don't have a spike cut going on. Is that right? Where we're at.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, all in favor? We've got one, two, three.
Can you just list out names? Will you guys just say names?
Okay.
Just start at that end and say who's it for. Or?
Tim, tell your name.
Jimmy Nashville, you need to drive.
Well. Who else is voting? I can't.
Jerry.
And then Daniel.
And who?
Daniel.
Okay, those opposed. One, two, three, four, five.
Correct.
Okay, so that motion's failed.
Melissa, Dan, Melissa, David. Okay.
All right.
So that's.
We go back to the first motion then, which is we accept the call as it was and we present it. And seconded, you want to do that again?
You want to second it?
30 seconds.
So, all those in favor of the elk management plan as it's been presented, please show it, those in favor. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Melissa, Dan.
Those opposed. 5-4.
Oh. Tim.
Joe this time.
Okay, who were the four?
Those opposed are Daniel Davis, Jerry.
Daniel Davis, okay.
Joe and Tim.
Got it.
All right, we got through one. Thank you. All right, next thing up, Shannon, you're still in the hot seat. This is might be a little bit more passionate, I kind of suspect, but we're going to jump into item number 11.
They're hunting out here.
No, it's good.
That is good.
I mean, I like the dialogue.
Let's come back a quarter after 8. About 5
feel
right now, about quarter after
8.
I'm going
over
that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have veggies, fruit,
Yeah, no problem.
That's when they'd be collected back.
Yeah. I'm going to be in the
I saw that there was a difference.
we could do that.
And I would have asked them, you know, at all.
We have
$10
for points. There was
a group that had tagged.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, how are you doing?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, tonight I'm going to present the 2016 Bucks Bulls Once in a Lifetime season dates, boundary descriptions, and rule changes. And as it began, I want to start with rule changes. So the big game rule is R657-5. And the first area that we'd like to tackle is clarifying areas with special restrictions. And in our guidebook, we have two bullet points in there. The first is, says in Salt Lake County, a person may only use archery equipment to take buck, deer, and bull elk south of I-80 and east of I-15. And then the second point is only use archery equipment to take big game in Immigration Township. And as we were looking at where this came from, we recognize that it was never clarified in our rule. So we're not proposing any change. We want to go status quo, but we want to put this language in our big game rule so we can cite it and say, okay, this has a place to clarify areas with special restrictions. Also, we want to increase the number of elk permits a person may obtain annually to 3 with the following breakdown. A maximum of 1 permit can be for a bull. A maximum of 1 antlerless elk permit can be obtained through the public draw. And a maximum of 2 antlerless elk permits can be obtained over the counter. This is different from last year and the last plan that we had, because in the past you could either take 2 antlerless elk or a bull and an antlerless elk. So a bull and a cow or 2 cows. And this provides a little bit more opportunity to help in situations like if a landowner has elk in his field that he needs help with and you have more permits that you can obtain one of those vouchers and go help out, those types of things. Because some of our hunts, like our spike hunts, like we were just talking about, have such low success rates. It's very possible for hunters to obtain these permits and still go home empty-handed with an elk. Also, we wanted to find antlerless elk control permits. This is something we've been doing for quite some time, but we wanted to clarify it in rule. So in order to obtain an antlerless elk control permit, a hunter must first obtain a buck, bull, or once-in-a-lifetime permit, and they may harvest an antlerless elk using the same weapon type during the same season and within areas of overlap between the boundaries of the buck, bull, once-in-a-lifetime permit and antlerless elk control permit. So as was mentioned earlier, these aren't statewide cow permits. They're specific areas that you can hunt elk in, and you have to have a buck, bull, or once-in-a-lifetime permit before doing so. We also want to define private land-only permits. This will be new for Utah. We have not done this before, but these permits would allow a person to take 1 antlerless elk on private lands using any weapon during the season dates and areas approved by the Wildlife Board. There would be no boundary extensions or buffer zones applied to these permits, and they're to be sold over the counter online. And again, the idea with these permits, and something that the Elk Committee felt very strongly about, is we have to get harvest in the right areas, and we need to apply hunting pressure in the right areas. And so in so doing, as you help elk not view private lands as a sanctuary, but then that can help our public land hunters have better hunting opportunities down the road. Additionally, we want to allow general season muzzleloader bull elk hunters to harvest a cow or bull elk with their muzzleloader permit, similar to archery. And again, we see this being recommended on units that are chronically over-objective and where hunter crowding is an issue, and throwing more antlerless elk hunters on top of each other may not necessarily be the solution to get more harvest. Regards to doe, deer, and pronghorn, this is something that we've had for a very, very long time. So a concept that we've moved forward with are 2 doe permits. And we recognize that we're not defined in rule, but these allow a person to take 2 antlerless deer or pronghorn using the weapon type within the area and during the season specified on the permit. These are pretty popular in the northern part of the state. We do them every year. We just wanted to define it a little better. And then also throughout the rule, other minor clarifications. If you'll remember this last summer, the division conducted a survey where we had over 19,000 respondents. And this slide is a quick and dirty summary of that those survey results. And I recognize it doesn't do it justice to what you guys saw earlier in the year. But to summarize, the majority of big game hunters did not support the use of crossbows during archery seasons, large caliber centerfire rifles, and smart guns or computerized targeting firearms. However, the majority of big game hunters did support electronic rangefinders attached to bows and scopes on muzzleloaders during the muzzleloader hunting season. So I hope this is a refresher. Again, I know it doesn't do it justice, the presentation you saw earlier. So with that background, we want to propose the following rule changes to R657-5. The first would be to prohibit the use of computerized targeting firearms to hunt big game. The second would be to allow magnifying scopes on muzzleloaders during the muzzleloader season. And the third would be to allow the use of an electronic range-finding device attached to a bow to take big game. So those would be the three recommendations that come out of that survey and the public input. And I want to say, too, if you took that survey, thank you. I think it's extremely important that as we manage these wildlife resources, especially in the big game program, that we know what it is that our hunters want and are seeking. And so we really value and appreciate the input that you gave. Moving on to general season deer hunts, season dates. With all these hunts, essentially what we did is moved every date back 5 days from what it was in 2015. So archery for 2016, we're recommending season dates of August 20th through September 16th, muzzleloader September 28th through October 6th, and any weapon October 22nd through October 30th. Archery season for elk is very similar to deer, except on your spike bull units, your season date ends September 9th, and on your any bull, it goes through September 16th. And again, the reason for the difference on that ending day is because as these archery spike hunts are taking place on limited entry units where limited entry hunters are also seeking big bulls, it gives a week closest to the rut of uninterrupted hunting with limited entry hunters, no general season. For any weapon, that would be October 8th through the 20th. It's your spike in any bull rifle season, and then muzzleloader would be November 2nd through November 10th. Next, I'd like to propose changes that have statewide implications and then move into regional recommendations. So the first is, last year at this meeting, we approved limited entry muzzleloader deer hunts to take place on general season units. And these units were managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, and they had to be exceeding 20 bucks per 100 does on their three-year average. I'm not sure how many remember that discussion, but we got quite a bit of input on that. And so we had those six units, and tonight we're recommending adding six more units to those. The Fillmore, the Monroe, the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz, Plateau Thousand Lakes, South Slope Yellowstone, and Wasatch Mountains East, which is... Wasatch Mountains East is essentially the Current Creek and Aviniquin. We'll talk about that later. Dax couldn't spell Aviniquin or Current Creek, so we had to had to simplify it to East because it was getting out of hand. So anyways, these are the six units that we would have a limited entry muzzleloader hunting opportunity for. And they're all exceeding 20 bucks per 100 goes. In addition to that, we want to add a limited entry bull elk hunt that overlaps the general season spike elk hunt in early to mid-October on select units. And again, this is where I want to clarify. This overlap with the spike would occur on the Box Elder Grouse Creek, Ponsagant, Plateau Fish Lake Thousand Lakes, and the West Desert Deep Creeks. Those are the units that have spike hunting. The South Slope Diamond Mountain does not have spike hunting, and we're not proposing it tonight, but the season dates for this hunt, this late season hunt, has historically fell within that window. So when the rest of the state is hunting spikes, we're hunting our late season here. And again, that's being proposed tonight. And I'm sorry about the misinformation on the memo and some of those things. You know, I love it when Dax gets mean phone calls, but I felt bad about these ones because this was clearly my fault. And again, this is something that we're going to ease into. This is We're going to ease into it both in the number of units that we try this on, and also as permit recommendations come through this spring, this RAC and will have an opportunity to look at what allocation of number of permits those units should have as well. So tonight we're just voting on should these units be included in that.
Those four units.
Those four units, correct. Yes. Moving on to regional recommendations. So for the southern region, we recommend discontinuing the beaver nanny mountain goat hunt. And then also this summer, some unit management plans from the southern region were taken to the board for approval. And in so doing, some of the boundaries were changed, specifically on the Oak Creek, Fillmore area, Pavant. And so this isn't so much something that you'd vote on tonight, but it's just more of an FYI that as you see boundary changes, it's because they were approved earlier by the Wildlife Board in the unit plans. For the southeast region, recommend altering the elk and bighorn sheep boundary on the Henry Mountains to align with the deer boundary. And in so doing, this would alter the spike elk and bighorn sheep boundaries on the South Santa Fe to match that new description. For the northern region, recommend adding an extended archery deer unit in the Cache Lake Town to address some urban deer issues. We also want to reinstate the Pilot Mountain bighorn sheep hunt and change its boundary and the elk boundary on the Pilot Mountains to be one and to be more clear. We also want to expand the boundary of the Pilot Mountain pronghorn hunt and rename it Box Elder West. That change affects the neighboring boundary, the Snowville unit. We want to change that boundary to match so there's alignment. And then finally, we recommend eliminating the Grouse Creek limited entry archery elk on this unit. Central region recommendations, no changes are being proposed tonight. Northeast region, we recommend discontinuing the youth late season any bull elk hunt. And then also adding a bighorn sheep hunt on the Wasatch Mountains of Inequin unit. And because we're starting slow on this, sportsman permit holder may hunt this unit during even years, and the statewide conservation permit holder can hunt it during odd years. It would be the recommendation from the division tonight. Some other things, just for clarification, this is, again, not something that we're taking to the RACs and boards for approval on, just more of clarification. If you look on our website, there's certain units that you can click on. The Fillmore Oak Creek for elk would be a good example. And in some cases, there's two different boundaries that have the same hunt name. And that, we want to minimize confusion. We don't want to add to it with these names. And so what we're doing is changing them. And so you can essentially click on one hunt name and it has a unique boundary with it, not multiple ones. And so these changes for elk would be the Fillmore Oak Creek and Santa Fe South. For deer, like I said, the Wasatch Mountains of Inequin and Currit Creek units would be renamed Wasatch Mountains East. Some changes on Fillmore, a 9 Mile Anthro would now be called 9 Mile Anthro Mite and Banch. Panguitch Lake Plateau and Chalk Creek Canvas also have changes as well. Some key dates for your consideration. For the big game drawing for bucks, bulls, once in a lifetime, some new dedicated hunter applicants and lifetime license holders. That application period begins January 28th and goes through the 3rd. If you're just looking to obtain a bonus point or preference point, that date's extended till the 17th of March, and results will be posted by the end of May. For some key dates for our hunters with disabilities, we present this every year, and essentially what we do is add 5 days before the hunt or after the hunt, so these hunters have a little bit longer season and more time afield. And that's all I have for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. I guess I got one question before we go to the question on the RAC. Why are you eliminating the youth hunt in this area?
I'll probably let Dax or Clint answer that.
Clint Sampson, wildlife biologist. The youth hunt, the early hunt, I think is a great hunt. It gives kids great opportunity to have a successful hunt. The late hunt, I think we're setting them up to fail. It is the toughest hunt. The success rate is extremely low. We just basically have really upset parents, they like to call me. and complain that, you know, and ask me why I chose to ruin their kids' lives. And so what we did is we added permits to the early hunt. And what we'll do to address the issues that might come up with removing this hunt, like depredation issues with bull elk and haystacks, those kind of things, what we'll do is we'll draw from the remainder of the youth hunt applicants that didn't draw. We'll go to that pool and have those kids come and be able to hunt bulls that we know they will have a really good opportunity to kill. It's a tough boundary, number one, and it's set up to deal with elk that are problem elk. And the last few winters, we haven't had, severe winters, haven't really dealt with too much depredation issues with bull elk that way. So that's
basically why. We're really not decreasing the opportunity.
No, that is the last thing I want to do is take opportunity away from kids. And I think it's a tough hunt. And that's what, I'm pretty straight up with the parents that call me asking about, where the elk are. And it's a tough hunt, extremely tough hunt. And so I think we'll be better off and give the kids better opportunities by doing away with it.
Thank you. I have a question for clarification. Okay. If you could go back a few slides about eliminating a hunt, I think it was in the central region. Northern.
That bottom one?
Yeah, eliminating Grouse Creek, but yet you said you're going to put a mid-season. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of confused.
Yeah, so this is the archery hunt on this area.
Okay.
Yeah, so what it is this is a unit that borders Nevada and Idaho, and it's a migration issue. So early in the season, we get a lot of cow groups that come in and calves, but the quality bulls for this unit don't come in until much later. And so with that season data, August to mid-September, early September, it hasn't been a quality hunt. So we want to eliminate this one and allocate those permits to hunts that have.
Okay, so you're saying up. You'll eliminate the archery hunt.
Yeah.
But increase the number during the rifle and
we would just shift those permits to later hunts.
Okay.
Yeah, again, it's really, I think Clint nailed it. We don't want to set hunters up to fail in this regard. And so if we know the elk have migration issues and they're not here, and the planet said manage to the right spatial areas and take migration patterns into account, I think this is a common sense approach for anybody that's drawn that tag.
Okay.
Can you buy two control tags
based on that third tag available?
No, based on the
rule? This new rule?
I do not believe so. I think it allows for one antlerless elk control permit to be obtained for one buck bull or once in a lifetime permit.
So basically a voucher from a landowner would be the only way you get that third.
What? No, there's other ways as well. So when it comes to other over-the-counter opportunities, we really have the antlerless elk control permits. We have private lands only permits that we'll be issuing this next spring on units. We'll have vouchers for mitigation, depredation situations. Those types of things. Depredation hunter pool, kind of, there's other avenues.
And that
cheap
tag you were talking about,
how
are you
going to
get up? Is that the
Aviniquin? On the
Aviniquin
unit?
It'll be small, but that won't be until spring.
Yeah, we wouldn't set permits tonight, but we, our goal is to start out with few permits, and so I don't anticipate many. Is that fair, Derek?
It'll be really small. And then that will go into the tribal agreement. Will be
that's why I was asking.
You'll be included on that.
Okay.
That'll be in April. On the muzzleloaders scopes, is there a power that's being suggested? Is there any limitations to the power of the scope?
Not in the division's proposal. I mean, we decided not to put a cap on that. And one reason we didn't is we did that survey. I think it was 59% were in favor of it, and 37% were opposed. And if you look just at muzzleloader hunters, it was even higher. 60% were in favor of the scopes on muzzleloaders. But we didn't, you know, in that survey, we started from here and came to here. We didn't get in the weeds on what scope, what power, some of that stuff. And it's it really boils down to a social issue. And so, you know, if that's something the RAC and the comments tonight want to struggle with and debate back and forth, I think it's a good conversation to have. But no, the division's recommendation, we did not put a cap on the scope.
The other question, Brother Rutt.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions, Justin. What was the reason for the 5-day kind of bump back on those on all those seasons? Maybe you mentioned
the disability hunters. Back here? On this one?
Yeah, it was one of the first slides there.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, so what we do...
everything kind of bump back.
Yeah, so our hunts kind of cycle. Generally... what drives our hunts is getting to the closest Saturday for an opener hunt, closest to October 20th. And so depending on what Saturday that is, it has the ability to influence. So before, season dates were getting closer and closer and closer, and then as the calendar year flips, it suddenly gets set back 5 days. So next year, everything will be moved up a day and again, and then eventually it flips back. So.
Okay, thanks. And then, so the other question was on those 6 additional limited entry muzzleloader deer hunts. Uh-huh. Did you talk about when those would be?
I probably didn't do a good job clarifying that. So the season dates for that would be November 2nd through November 10th, and what it's intended to do is overlap the muzzleloader elk hunt. And one reason for that is because as the mule deer committee. Getting my committees mixed up. As the mule deer committee discussed this hunt, it was we wanted to provide opportunity to get limited entry deer hunters through the point system, but without necessarily converting a general season unit to a limited entry unit. And so if we had excess bucks on these units that are managed for $20 per 100 does and they were exceeding that, then the way you can still provide a quality hunt there is later in the season with a primitive weapon, but it's not in the rut. It's just, it's later, but it's not that time that we're out classifying when all the bucks and, or the bull, the deer are rutting out there, so.
Any other question by the rack?
What's considered a computerized rifle sight?
Yeah. So what we consider this is what we call a smart gun, and it's essentially where I've never shot one, admittedly. So if I struggle through clarifying, someone better at this than me, please step in. But essentially, you lock the target on the animal, and the gun does not discharge until it's going to hit that target, and so you could pull the trigger all day long, it's not going to hit until you're set up to do so, and accuracy is just extremely high on these things. And so what we're trying to do is ban those smart guns from big game hunting.
Any question by the rack?
See, us dummies can still stay behind the skull.
It's a real thing, I swear.
Okay, we'll go ahead and do questions by the public, but this time we do want, if you want to comment in the comment period, fill out one of these cards, because we're going to go from questions to the end of the comments. So, right now, questions from the, Blake? State your name if you would.
Yeah, Blake Best, dedicated hunter. Justin, I was just on where you're getting the high-powered scopes on your muzzleloaders. I was wondering if you guys had took the... time to think about people shooting animals and wounding them, taking shots that are further than their equipment is capable of with these high-powered scopes.
Yeah, it's, you know, we consider this whole conversation a social issue. And the reason we do is because it's hard to predict exactly what's going to happen with these. And I know as a big game quarter, I should have all these answers, but I don't. As we issue these muzzleloader permit or have scopes on muzzleloaders, I think hunters that were going to take ethical shots will continue to take ethical shots. and those that weren't, they may not continue to do so. And we don't have anything to really quantify where that's going to land. But the one thing, the one reason we were comfortable with scopes on muzzleloaders is, as an agency, we want hunters to make good shot placement. And we've heard time and time again through people coming to the Wildlife Board meeting and other things like that with difficult eyesight and lining up open sights and the struggles with that, and the one power scopes, which actually can be considered a demagnification on it. A one power scope doesn't mean you're seeing clearly. It's less in some case. It's less. And so as we did that survey, we looked at it and said, you know, if this is what the hunting public wants, let's take it out for public input and see. So a lot of things were discussed and debated. I don't know if I have great answers for you on speculation tonight. I don't know where all this is going to land.
Yeah, I'm just curious if you guys had took that into consideration.
It's a great question.
Other questions? Got questions, please bring them forward, because we're at home in peace otherwise.
We have a question in the back.
Yep, come on up to the mic and do it, please. Get your name again.
My name is Austin Burke, and I was just wondering, if there was going to be a magnification put on the muzzleloader, which you haven't proposed it yet. Was there any idea what you would think that might be? Because, I mean, obviously, a lot of people are not going to put a 24 power scope on their muzzleloader because it isn't going to shoot 300 yards. But, you know, 3x9 or whatever might become reasonable. I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
Maybe I wasn't. Let me clarify the recommendation tonight, because maybe I didn't do a good job with it. But if this recommendation is passed as presented, what that would mean is we can put scopes on muzzleloaders to harvest big game during muzzleloader seasons, and there's no limit on the magnification power. We're not capping it at a 9. We're not capping it at a 4 or a 24. You can just simply use scopes on muzzleloaders. So did that help? Did that clarify?
Yeah.
Okay.
Other question by the public? All right, we're going to, when we get in the question period, then we'll go into comments. And so you're going to hold your peace on this one. So you kind of primed the pump last time. So any other questions? All right, we'll go into comments then. I guess comments by the public. We've got about four of them here. Blake, we'll start with you first.
Three. Blake Best, dedicated hunter, currently enrolled in the dedicated hunter program for the South Slope Yellowstone unit. Just to address the rack, I'm pretty concerned on this knee lake muzzleloader hunt you guys are proposing. I just don't see the numbers of bucks that needs to be there for a limited entry hunt. This was my second year into the program. Next year will be my third. And I just wanted to address the rack that I think seriously about these later muzzleloader hunts hurting our deer herds worse than they are. Thank you.
Thank you, Blake. Tyrell.
Tyrell, hey, Bagman. I just wanted to touch again on this elk control permits that they're giving out. Like I say, I mean, the law enforcement and the licensing agencies both, I mean, I know that they have the licensing agencies go to a class on how to sell these and whatnot, and I actually had them trying to sell me one for my Unit 11 buck deer tag. And I had to get the proclamation out to show her what is in that, as far as that paragraph that you brought up, and she told me that I explained to her better than what the class did. We need to clarify this as to where you can hunt and with what units. That's all I need.
Thank you. Matt Draper.
Yeah, Matt Draper. I just wanted to shed some light again with this youth late elk hunt doing away with it.
I've known a few people that have drawn it, and they didn't realize at the time of putting in that the early and late U-belt are totally separate boundary descriptions. The late being primarily further east and private land type front. I just not sure that the boundary is separate. It's not just early and late like a lot of the things that you are.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right, thank you. We'll close the comment section. Comments by the rep. I guess I'll keep it on us. I like the idea of the muzzleloader hunt. Additional magnification on the muzzleloaders, but I'm not too excited about having anyone on there. They make the muzzleloaders out there now that'll shoot 700 to 1,000 yards, and I don't know that that's a pretty good weapon. I guess I just don't like. I think, I'd feel more comfortable having some kind of a limit on that, such as a 4-power or something like that on the magnification. In favor of the additional range finders on the poles, I think that's a great idea. Anyway, other comments for discussion?
When will we see the areas that would be open to either sex on the border?
I'm sorry.
It said areas over objective, you'd be able to shoot cow or bull with the muzzleloader. We have input on that?
So tonight what we're trying to do is clarify that in rule to kind of set a framework in our big game rule. And then you would see a recommendation this next spring when we take our big game recs and antlerless permit recommendations through.
Then you'd say where you want to do that around the state.
Correct, yeah.
Other discussion? I thought this would be more passionate than last one. Sorry, Justin.
I accept your apology for
that. The tables are still to come, right? The tables for the specific ones, you're still going to address them, right?
That's what you're voting on right now.
So, like, well, Blake's comment, we didn't discuss that new hunt, that late-season muzzleloader deer hunt on South Slope Yellowstone. It's in the table.
It is in the table, and it was presented here as well. Mm-hmm. So this is one that he's referring to.
I'm sorry, it went by me.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Different things is this particular one right here in the South Slope, the Orton deer hunt, maybe a little objection to that. And maybe a little objection to the power scopes. We can vote on things separately if we want to. I kind of expected to be to have 3 or 4 motions on this one, but doesn't sound seem like there's as much passion as I guess I thought there was.
Can we break it down so it's
yes,
clear?
We can break these into different motions. And I guess I was thinking of one mainly just dealing with the this particular late season muzzleloader, another one on the scopes, and maybe another one on just the rest of the plan. But
I'll make a motion. We accept the DWR's plan as presented.
Okay. We got a motion, a second? Jim, you got a second? We've got a motion and a second to accept it as it's presented. Do we have any other discussion on it?
I'd like to amend the motion.
Okay.
Substitute motion?
Substitute motion.
Okay.
Rule 657-5, the weapon restrictions. Changing that to a 4-power scope on a muzzleloader, not to exceed. And leave the rest of the rule as it's stated.
Okay, we got a second on that substitute motion? No second?
No.
Okay, that one will drop. So we have a motion not to accept the plan as it was and seconded. Any other substitute motions? I'll call for a vote. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And Jerry, are you standing or are you voting?
I'm opposed.
Okay. We got one opposed.
Who was opposed?
Jerry. All right. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate all your time and effort. Justin has a big job in what he does to try to please everybody. We really appreciate what he does in that position. He does a fantastic job there. Yes, he does. Next up, we've got the guy Wallace with the deer management plan.
My name is Guy Wallace, and I'm the Southeast Region Wildlife Manager, and I'm going to present the deer management plans for the Southeast Region. Last December, the Wildlife Board passed our statewide deer plan. The statewide deer plan set the direction for our deer management over the next 5 years. The statewide plan set the sideboards for our unit management plan, and our unit management plans are typically written after we complete our range trend information for those units. The goals for our unit plans are to manage for healthy populations with a broad range of activities, to maintain populations within the long-term capacity of the habitat, and to improve and protect habitat. A part of the population strategies would be how we monitor those populations. If there are limiting factors with those populations, we will address those factors within the unit management plan. There's also habitat strategies, strategies for monitoring, for protection and maintenance, and how we're going to improve habitat on those units. These are the units in the Southeast region. There is one unit that's part of this. It's the Central region. It's the NEBO unit. But the others are all in the Southeast region. The Dolores Triangle unit, the range trend information was not read until this year, but it's a part of the LaSalle plan, and we're going to include that if there's any information we get from the range trend that needs warrants a change. We will address that next year with an amendment to the LaSalle plan. We were also directed by the Wildlife Board, based on concern by sportsmen, particularly on the southeast portion of the Manti, to look at options to split the Manti unit and how it would affect the buck-doe ratio. To do that, we held 4 open houses in the region, across the region. What we did with those was to look at boundaries, management goals, objectives for those units, and strategies for the deer populations. The meetings were not well attended. We had approximately 50 to 60 people that attended the meetings altogether. So what I did basically was just kind of summarize what the focus of the concerns were at those meetings and on which units. On the Central Mountains, the big concern really there was population. There's a portion of that unit that the sportsmen are very concerned about population in that area. And so the split unit part was part of that concern that was brought up. On the LaSalle's, the Abajos, and Elk Ridge, we have healthy predator populations, so of course predation was a big issue with those units. The Henry Mountains, primarily the issue was no additional permits, not really a crowding issue, and I'm not sure why I put that up there, but it was really that they didn't want any additional permits. The other thing we did is we conducted an email survey of hunters that hunted the Manti unit. This represents the hunters for each portion of that unit, the North, the South Manti, and the San Rafael, which is also a portion of the Manti unit. The survey basically indicated that the majority did not want to split the Manti North and South. The second part of that was the San Rafael. And what was interesting about this was that the North and South Manti hunters, the majority of them did want to split the San Rafael off, but the San Rafael hunters did not want to split it off. So we asked the question, if the units were split into three units, which of the units would you pick? And again, the interesting part of that was 50% of the San Rafael hunters said they would not pick the San Rafael if it was split off. They would, most of those would go to the South Manti, which would increase the applicants on that unit for those permits. So we'll start with the Central Mountains. Based on the survey information that we received, we are not proposing any changes to the Manti in terms of buck doe ratio or population objective. This is the population estimate trend for the Manti. The permits that we have issue on the Manti the past 3 years are actually less than what the historical average has been on that unit. And we've seen a pretty good increase in our buck doe ratio. We're actually above objective by quite a bit. The 3 year average is 19 bucks per 100 does. So there's several issues here, and I'll try and get through these. The Manti unit is a large public land unit. There's lots of road access to that unit, and it's the most popular general season unit in the state, with more applicants per permit on that than any other unit. And a 15 to 17 buck doe ratio allows us to maximize opportunity on that unit. If we go to a 18 to 20 or a higher buck doe ratio, then it reduces the odds of drawing permits on those units because we would probably have to reduce permits at some point. The Manti unit is also a CWD positive unit, which creates some issues, some problems with trying to manage for a higher buck doe ratio, in that there's more potential for spread with more mature bucks in a population. With CWD, those mature bucks' life expectancy is less, so it would be more difficult to maintain that high buck doe ratio with CWD. However, on a positive note, the fawn production does remain good on the Manti unit. As I indicated before, the public survey said that the majority of the public did not want to split the unit north and south, that most of the San Rafael hunters did not want to split the unit. There were some other issues with the San Rafael unit. It'd be very difficult to determine a boundary because right now the boundary goes up Highway 10, which would split all the agricultural land, and those are areas we want to maintain harvest in that to try and help reduce our depredation issues. The other thing with the San Rafael is we don't collect any information. The deer numbers are so sparse out there that it's really difficult to get a buck doe ratio with that unit if we split it off, and it would be even more difficult to determine a population objective for that unit since we don't collect any data for that. So basically, based on the concern that the sportsmen had for that portion of the unit, our strategy was to pursue augmentation for those portions of the unit where we have chronic low deer numbers. That unit is not identified in our statewide plan, so we had to submit that through the RDCC process, and we received no comments, which means we can add that to the statewide transplant list. So we will be able to transplant deer to that unit, or that portion of the unit. One thing we found with some of our previous transplant work on Elk Ridge is that those deer tend to remain in the areas that you release them. So there's a high potential if we can put those into these areas where we have low deer numbers that they will stay there. The other aspect of this, what we want to do with the Manti is currently most of our telemetry studies are on the north portion of the unit, and we want to expand those telemetry studies to the southeast portion to see if we have any differences in deer survival, which may indicate a problem there. Very quickly, this is the transplant sites that we proposed. The north end of that is Huntington Canyon, south to I-70. So those are the sites along the southeast Manti that would be proposed for transplants. The Central Mountains Nebo is not proposing any changes for that unit. It's managed at a 15 to 17 bucks per 100 does. Population has shown an increase and now fairly stable. The buck doe ratio has climbed on that unit as well. It's slightly above the buck doe objective on that unit. On the LaSalle Mountains, there are no proposed changes for that management plan. The population there has been a little more stable, primarily to lower fawn production on that unit. We did decrease permits a year after we went unit by unit. We saw a decline in our buck doe ratio. We decreased permits by 200. We saw a rise back up in the buck doe ratio, and it's just slightly below, but we've only been at that permit level for 2 years. Well, this was the third year, and so we'll have the data on the buck doe ratio from this year to determine if that lower permit numbers is going to maintain our buck doe ratio. The Dolores Triangle is kind of a unique unit in that it's primarily a Colorado deer herd. They summer almost entirely in Colorado, and we have a portion of the winter range. And so our objective is based on the proportion of winter range we have of that Colorado herd. That herd has shown a decline. We have some range issues, winter habitat issues on that unit, so we actually, what year looks like 2012, I think, we reduced the population objective. We made it a short-term population objective to see if maybe through some projects where we can try and rehab that winter range, we can get that winter range back, and then we would hope to increase that population objective back. One thing you'll note on there on the bottom line is our permits. The number of deer that come into the triangle is determined by the winter severity in Colorado, so we keep those permits very conservative, and that's why we're at 20 permits and have been for a long time. There has been a decline in the buck doe ratio. The average is, or 3-year average is 22, but it's not based on the 20 permits that we issue because it's such a small number. It's more related to Colorado's harvest and the decline on the Colorado side. The Abajo Mountains is another unit that we're not proposing any changes to. The Abajo Mountains is actually at one point had reached the population objective. The decline was due to a severe winter we had in 2011, where we did have some deer loss that year, and since then we've seen it start to climb back up. We're maintaining the buck doe ratio, 3-year average is 17, and we're actually seeing that climb back up a little bit. The Elk Ridge portion of San Juan is kind of a different story. We manage that at a 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does. It's a limited entry unit. We have some range issues in there, and I have a slide here in a second that will show you what we're dealing with there. We're looking at a 20% reduction, and that's based on the beef basin winter range represents 20% of the winter range on that unit. So we feel like it's a conservative reduction in that Probably when the deer numbers were high, the proportion of deer that it wintered was higher than 20% of the units deer. This kind of shows what our population trend has been. Some of that, the difficulty with that is it's a small deer population, and with these computer models, it's difficult to very accurately model small populations, especially where we have very limited harvest. But we still feel that the population has declined, and we've issued 50 permits on that unit for quite a long time. We're able to maintain the buck-doe ratio with those 50 permits, and we actually harvest, our average age harvest is about a 5.5-year-old buck on that unit. This shows one of the concerns that we have with that. This is a DCI index, is a desirable components index. This is the information that our range trend crew collects, and they look at the forage that deer utilize and the trends in that forage, particularly the browse, and then based on the trend, they give it a score or a rating, and the large red dots are very poor indicators of what the winter ranges are doing. This is the Beef Basin area that I talked about. This has been a long-term process, and probably we should have reduced the objective some time ago, last time we revised it. One of the things that are different about this unit, I mentioned earlier, we had done transplants, but we're not transplanting into this portion of the unit. This is on the very north end. The transplants that we're doing is on the south end of the unit, where there's a lot of unused winter range down there. And those deer are remaining down there, so hopefully we can build the herd on that end while this end recovers. We've done quite a bit of work, range work in here to try and recover this. I didn't put in a slide, but the past 3 years we've been planting sagebrush, hand planting, and with tractors planting sagebrush seedlings back into this to try and get sagebrush back into that winter range. And with all the moisture we had this summer, our last seedings looked very well, very high success on those. The Henry Mountains unit is kind of the opposite. We have we've maintained very high fawn production on that unit. A large part of that is a result of the big fires we had on that unit. We manage that. It's a premium limited entry. Most of you probably know that. And it's managed at 40 to 50 bucks per 100 does. We're actually asking for an increase to the population objective to 2,700. We feel like right now we're currently above the objective, around 2,200. And so this is a 500 deer increase in that objective. The permit numbers have remained fairly stable. We issue 50, or less than 50, usually 48 permits for the regular hunt, and then there's another 30 to 35 permits that are management hunts. And the reason for the management hunts is primarily to try and keep the buck-doe ratio down within our management objectives. The yellow line on that one I've added, the second part of the objective for the Henry Mountains, is to manage that unit for more than 55% of your bucks being greater than 5 years old. And so we've been able to do that, so we're still well above that 55% on our mature bucks. So this is kind of the summary of the units that we're revising our plans, and we have the two changes. The two major changes are the reduction on the San Juan Elk Ridge and the increase on the Henry Mountains. And then, of course, on the Central Mountains, it's the transplant and telemetry changes that we're proposing for that unit. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay. All right, question by the rock. No question. Question by the public. Blake?
Blake Best, dedicated hunter. A guy on here, he'll pull up that graph on that San Juan Elk Ridge unit. If you look there, your current population, 700.
Let me get back. There we go. Yes.
One more. Second pack. Right there. If you look right there, current population, 700. population objective, 7,000, that's 1,000% decibel. What are you guys doing to help get that back up where it needs to be?
Well, part of it is the transplant that we've done, deer transplants on the south part of the unit. We transplanted 100 deer over the last 2 years. The winter range work that we're trying to rehabilitate, the winter range, that Beak Basin winter range. It's a priority in our unit for predator control. We're fairly liberal with our bear permits and cougar permits. Well, those are primarily the things we're trying to do. The other thing I want to caution you about is the 7,000 population objective was determined in the 80s. We had different harvest, we weren't managing unit by unit prior to that. We were looking at harvest data from when these units were open units. And so we had to try and determine a starting point based on that harvest level. And, you know, the 7,000 head may or may not be where it ought to be. We'd like, of course, if we can get it to there, we'd like to do that. But we need to look at that. And this is a short-term objective to see if we can make it to 5,600. And then beyond that, we could adjust it if need be.
You guys are lowering your objective to 5,600. You're still looking at a 5,000 number deficit there. Are you guys lowering your tag numbers to help increase the population?
No, we're not, because, we're at 50 permits a year, and we're maintaining a five-year-old buck. Our buck-doe ratio is at 28, I think it was, 28 bucks per 100 does. So at that population level, with just the 50 permits, we're able to maintain that. Part of the issue is that we don't see really good fawn production, so it's just enough to basically maintain that population, but not enough to increase it. And so until we see something that turns fawn production around, it's probably going to remain low.
Thank you.
You bet.
Any other questions by the
Tyrell?
Hey, Bigman. On the Henry Mountains, I've also observed that here the last year or two that the number of the great big bucks, like say the 5 year and older, that has started to go down. It is hard to find those 5 year old bucks and bigger. Any idea what the cause of that is, and how to get it turned back around?
Well, it's kind of an interesting way to look at it is that, let me see if I can go back to that one. We're seeing an increase in population, and really the buck-doe ratio, what we're trying to do is to keep it within the levels by having those management hunts without taking more of those big bucks. And part of that is probably we've just reached a point where we're harvesting the cream of the crop every year off that unit. But we still average a six-year-old buck. The age has not declined at all, so we still average a good mature buck on that unit and some of the best bucks in the state.
Well, I've just noticed since 2010, 2011, that's getting harder and harder to find. I mean, you used to be able to go down there and take pictures of great big 30-inch bucks all day long, and it's getting harder and harder to find than the quantity.
Okay. Any other comments by the public? Or questions? I'm sorry. Questions by the public? All right, we'll move to comments. I've got one comment, Blake.
I'd just like to tell the racket I'm concerned about the population down the Elk Ridge. I spent 15 days down there on the muzzleloader elk hunt. And their deer herd down there is really hurting. I'd just like to let you guys know that we ought to look into doing something about it, maybe a little more. I mean, I know we moved 100 deer over there, but we got a 5,000 number difference on their graph there. We got a serious problem. Thank you.
That's the only card I had. Anybody want to fill out a card and come up and provide a comment? Okay, thank you. Well, discretion by the rack. Mitch?
I've got a question for you, Mr. Chairman. This is a Southeast region Unit Management action plan, not information, but an action plan. And I'm an agriculture representative for the Northeastern Unit Management. Why would I be qualified to vote on an action
plan? I think I'm going to let our regional supervisor explain that one.
Our deer management plans are actually made in the regions. However, they have an effect statewide. As you heard, we have one person here that hunts down on Elk Ridge. We had somebody else comment on the Henrys, and we felt as an agency that they should have everybody. This has gone all around the state. And everybody should have an opportunity to provide some input if they have it. If they don't, then they can accept it as presented. If they've got comment and a recommendation, we ought to hear it here as much as we hear it anywhere else in the state. So that's why you're allowed to make a comment and to make a vote.
Looks like they have their meeting. Yesterday?
Yes, they did.
How did they vote?
It was approved.
It was approved?
Yes.
And I believe
so if it's voted to disapprove it, how would that work?
It worked just like that. You vote to disapprove it, and then you go to the Wildlife Board, and the Wildlife Board says, who the heck did that?
I make the motion we disapprove.
And I'll type down why.
To be
normal?
Just as a point of order, we wouldn't consider the source of Mitch disapproval.
Okay. I didn't want to say that, but
it is a concern. I don't feel qualified exactly.
And so you just want to probably just accept it as presented?
Or abstain.
Or abstain, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Mitch, it may be useful to know we'll be taking our region's plan around the whole state next year.
Yep.
So everybody in the southern region can vote on Diamond or the Look Cliffs, and their input matters just like ours.
Yep, that's correct.
Well, the Wildlife Board will take it into consideration when they make their recommendations or where they're at.
And some of these units, I'll point out that we have a lot of hunters from other areas of the state. The LaSalle, the Abajos, we get a lot of hunters from other portions of the state, so it's just an opportunity to let them comment on these plans.
I think you should be flattered that they want your opinion, Mitch.
A lot of times it's just informed. Yeah, and it's action.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have a question. Maybe I'm a little bit illiterate about this, but I wonder why you'd try to manage the Henry Mountains at $50 out of 100 deer being bucks. That seems awfully high to me, and it seems like a lot of competition for breeding rights and whatever. And I wonder if maybe there would be any way to hold it in a special hunt for ugly 3 points or something to wean out some of the what's the word for it?
Actually, we do that.
Ugly bucks.
And that's what the management permits are. Maybe I didn't make that very clear.
Oh, they're not for does?
No, the management permits are for bucks that are 3 points on one side.
Oh, well, that's a good. Yeah. Well, that sounds good to me then.
Yeah.
It just seems like a pretty high ratio.
Other discussions?
I have a question. So on to the point of Mr. Bess, on the objective being way low, 5,000 deer. So the strategy is you're maintaining the same amount of permits.
Correct? Yeah.
And the strategy to get to that objective with still issuing the amount of permits, how do you expect to get there with such a low number?
Well, like I said, it's in terms of the objective within the plan on the buck-doe ratio, we're able to maintain that just because of the low number of permits. The population issue is kind of a separate issue, and those are the things we can address through habitat, transplants, predator control, things like that. So that's how we're addressing population issues. Buck-doe ratio is primarily through the number of permits we issue to hunt.
I guess the cost is there's plenty of bucks down there to do the breeding, so you're not having those that are getting bred, it's just that.
Right. You know, what's interesting about that is with that, even with that high buck-doe ratio, in our region, it's one of the lowest fawn-to-doe ratios in the unit or in the region. We typically run in the 30s on our fawn-doe ratio with one of the higher buck-doe ratios. So there's something else going on, something probably habitat-related that we're not getting that kind of high production that we see on some of the other units. It's not lack of breeding.
Do you have wild horses down there?
No.
Other discussion, Brother Ryan. Well, I'll entertain a motion on this one. You want to make a motion on this action item?
Motion to accept.
I'll make a motion that we accept the recommendation.
First.
As presented. Missy, seconded it. Any substitute motions? All right, all in favor? It is.
Not you.
We got eight. All those opposed? Mitch, you abstaining? All right, Mitch abstaining.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
I did. All right, the next thing on our agenda is the CWMA plans. And I just stop the phone. Is going to do that for us. We've got the next three topics.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Give me a second just to find my presentations here.
This gives you time. This gives you time to get us more.
Be the bottom three.
So, okay.
And they're in order, so just go up three. You should be on order.
Thanks. I'm kind of blind. So we're ready for this? I'm Scott McFarland. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the Division. And this evening I'll be presenting the 2016 CWMU Buck and Bull Recommendations. Just kind of a prelude to this, we receive, for the CWMU program, we receive basically three types of applications every year. We receive new applications, which are obviously new, that have never been CWMUs before. We have new applications that have on CWMUs that have had fairly significant changes in properties, acreage, or land ownership that puts them into a new application category. We have renewal applications. CWMUs are approved on a three-year basis for a three-year time period, and when they're up to the three years, they come up for renewal, and that's what some of these are tonight. And we have change applications. Within that three-year period, a CWMU has the ability to request changes in parts of their management plan and permit numbers. Any change in permit numbers or change in permit allocation In other words, the private-public split on permits, the ratio, or they can, or any change in season dates has to go through the rack and board process if they desire to do that. And these recommendations can come from the division or they can come from the CWMU, either one. So this year for 2016, we have seven new applications. Two of those are to significant changes in land ownership or acreage changes. We have five brand new applications, and we have one application with the division recommendation to deny, and that's the Blue Mountain Mule Lease. We have 12 CWMUs that submitted three renewal applications for 2016 to 18, their next three-year period. We have nine CWMUs that submitted change applications requiring RAC and board approval, and 40 CWMUs basically did not reply or just reapply or just dropped out of the program. So we have a total of 28 applications this year. So as an overview of the CWMU program, this is based on the division recommendations. We would have 127 CWMUs for 2016. That's the same as it was for 2017, but we had some dropout and some additions. So breakdown by region, the northern would have 75 CWMUs, the northeastern region would have 7, central region would have 11, and the southeastern region would have 20, and southern region 14. We have over 2.26 million acres enrolled in the program, of which 96.8% is private land. We have 605 private landowners that are currently participating in the CWMU program. So overall permit numbers that we're recommending for the CWMUs, and I'll just go through these quickly by species, but we're recommending 1,996 private permits that would go to the CWMUs and 264 public permits. We have one CWMU that has management buck deer permits, and there would be two of those of the private permits and one public, and that's the Alton CWMU, by the way. Bull Elk, there'd be 943 private permits and 140 public permits. Buck pronghorn, 83 private, and 62 public, and bull moose, there would be 48 private and 30 public permits, for a total of 3,072 permits that would go to the CWMUs and 497 permits that would go to the public, which represents 14% of the total permits. And that's for bucks and bulls. I'm going to go through the application recommendations by the region. We'll start with the northern region. They had three new CWMUs. The Georges Creek is the only brand new one. It hasn't been a CWMU before. It's a deer CWMU. And our rule requires that the division provide a recommendation to the RAC and the board on this. And so your right-hand column is the recommendation that we're giving on these. And we approve. We have Rattlesnake Pass and Riverview Ranch, and those are because of new changes in ownership or acreage. We recommend the approval of all three of these. They're new renewal applications. These are the ones that are up for renewal. They're at the end of their 3 years. We had Bastion Ranch, Cotton Thomas, Junction Valley, Pine Canyon, Rabbit Creek, Strawberry Ridge, and White's Valley. Okay, the changes, the column that has the changes, the rule also says it will denote any changes from their previous application, and that's what's, I'm not going to read all those, but that's what's in that changes column there. And the in the yellow lettering there, this is one of the changes that requires probably specific RAC and board action. It's a request for an elk season variance. They already had a variance before that went to the 20th of November, and they're requesting a variance to go to the 30th of November. In order to get these variances, what they have to do is write in their management plan an explanation of why it is needed, and the division has to review that and agree with that. So if we approve it, it means that the division's in agreement with that. A lot of the times the request for the variance is because the elk, they provide a lot of habitat for elk, but usually it's not at times of the year where the normal season, where they can hunt them during the normal season, and so they request a variance, and that's allowed by rule. The division recommends approval of all of these renewal applications for the northern region. We had several change applications. The changes are normally either property increases or decreases, and more than likely it's the permits, and sometimes they'll drop species. We also have some of them that have request bull elk season variances, extensions to their variances, and that would be in the yellow lettering. But we have Deseret, CWMU, Jacobs Creek, SJ Ranch, Clark Valley, Grass Valley, Clark Canyon, and Park Valley. On the right hand, we have Jacobs Creek. During the northern region RAC, they came and withdrew their proposed boundary change that the division was in disagreement with. But they also request to have deer drop from their CWMU. They're currently a deer, elk, and moose, and they requested that deer be dropped from that. And that was presented in the Northern Regional Advisory Council meeting last week. So the recommendation would be on this is they wanted to increase 10 elk permits from 10 to 20 with an 18-2 split. And no boundary change and drop elk deer from the CWMU. So that was, and we're in agreement with that, and so that would be the recommendation. Grass Valley Clark Canyon is also requesting a bull elk season variance to November 30th. And we recommend approval of all of these at this time. So. Southeastern region applications, we have one new CWMU. It's Black Hawk CWMU. It's 10,110 acres. It's deer and elk, and they requested an elk season variance to the November 30th, and this was due to the timing of the elk being on the CWMU. They provide a lot of winter habitat for these elk and late season and winter habitat, and the division's in agreement with that and recommend approval of that application. Had one renewal, and that was JB Ranch, and they just changed the operator and requested an antlerless elk permit increased by 5, and that will be reflected in the spring meetings, but it was a change to their application. We recommend approval of that one. These are all change applications for the southeastern region. Schofield East, Schofield Canyon, Summit Point, Deer Haven, and Spring Creek Dodge. A lot of these are requesting additional permits. The only split recommendation we have on this is with Schofield Canyons. They requested to increase their bull permits by 2 additional bull permits. The way the bull permits are allocated for a CWMU is the same way they do them for a landowner association. They have to qualify by percentage of acreage in the permit in the limited entry unit. Anything that's in a limited entry unit has to go by that. So the division has not been in agreement with increasing that because they don't qualify by acreage on that. Otherwise, the division recommends approval of all the rest of these CWMUs. And if they request an additional one and we recommend approval, that is because they do qualify by acreage. Southern region, we had one new application. This is an application that they applied in 2014 for the 15 season. It was denied because there was public properties that didn't qualify in it. They have since remedied that. It's entirely private property now. That's a change, that's a misprint on the acres on there. It's 5,543 acres, so it's over the 5,000 minimum. It does qualify, met all the requirements, and the division is recommending approval of that one. The Southern Region renewal applications, we had Grazing Pasture and Johnson Mountain Ranch. Johnson Mountain Ranch was just a renewal that they swapped. The only change they had is they added 91 public acres and traded 91 acres. To even that out, so there's no permit adjustment. We recommend approval of that. Grazing Pasture has had some deer season change dates and some public our permit changes also. We recommend approval of that one. The Central Region, we had just two renewal applications for the Central Region. Chris's Creek, there was no changes from the previous one. We recommend approval of that. In Heartland West, they had some permit number changes and the president and operator change. We recommend approval of that one also. Northeastern Region, we had two new applications, the Blue Mountain Muleys. This was a, I neglected to put, this is a deer and pronghorn, so it should say deer and pronghorn on there. It's nothing like a rack meeting to find your mistakes. So the acreage are correct on that. The recommendation to that is to deny. The reasons that we're recommending denial on this is because of the complexity of the boundary that we have. Our rule states that the intent is to establish CWMUs that consist of blocks of land that make up a, that constitute a good hunting unit. It has to exhibit boundaries that are clearly identifiable to both the public and the private, and we don't feel that it meets this qualification on that. It's a very complex boundary. And the next one is West Willow Creek Ranch in this CWMU. It's a new one. It's 22,400 acres in Book Cliffs units for deer
and
pronghorn, sorry. Somehow I had a thing against pronghorn, I guess, but we're recommending approval of that one at this time. And that's all the CWMU recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. All right, question by the rack.
I've got one, Mr. Chairman.
Go for it. On the proposed changes, number 18, on the non-trophy youth buck deer hunt, is not recommended. What do fishing games have a little harder than these youth hunts? Can you?
That's a couple presentations down. It's not in the CWU one, but okay. I will address that, though. And sorry about that.
I was just curious, do you have a picture of the two boundaries of the new ones in our region?
I got a picture of the one that we're recommending denial of, but I don't have a picture of the West Willow Creek.
Can we see that?
This is the best map I have of it right there, but this is the proposed West Willow Creek. It's just under 6,000 acres.
Is this the blue one?
No, this is... This is the Blue Mountain Muleys, excuse me. Blue Mountain Muleys right here. So. What it is, the yellow is the proposed CWMU, everything within the yellow, excluding the very bottom part of the map there.
Does that go to the Wyoming border, I take it?
Yes, it does.
So where is, I'm trying to figure out exactly where it's at.
It's the yellow.
It's all the yellow.
But where in
Manila?
It's in Manila. So it's up in Manila.
If somebody could help me out on this, because I'm not familiar with that.
Manila's right here in this corner. It's just all those little lines west going this way. You see your landowners
there. And one of the other reasons for, sorry I left this out, but one of the other reasons for recommended denial is our rule states that the Wildlife Board it needs to consider other information provided by the division, such as violations of members of the landowner association or the operator, and there's been some past violations of the operator of the proposed CWMU that we feel kind of jeopardizes it compromises their ability to effectively run a CWMU and represent the division, and that's one of the other reasons for denial on this. Sorry, I omitted that. It's kind of a dual reason. It's the boundary and the other two. So. And I think Boyd provided you the letter. That was the letter that to comply with the rule that we notified the operator.
No, you need just to mean that. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
So, in a comparison to, say, the Alton CWMU, the way that border is down there, it encompasses some BLM mm-hmm. and state sections and things like that, even though they're public lands.
Right.
Will any of these new CWMUs close out any of that public land?
And you'll have to help me. I believe it's the West. Yeah, go ahead and answer that. West Willow Creek.
Clint Sampson. The West Willow Creek ranch property, and Clay Batty might want to speak to this later on too. But it does take in 5 sections of public land. But you'll find that it's not as bad as it seems. I want to be the last one to take away public hunting areas and make them inaccessible. But the Book Cliffs is a unique area because it's not like you have limited entry and general season guys looking over the fence. It's limited entry on both sides of the fence. And so to make it a good hunting experience for the guy who draws the public tag for the CWMU, we felt it necessary to include those public acres to make it continuous and to provide good opportunities to hunt for the CWMU and also the other limited entry guys as well that hunt the Book Cliffs. So it does include some public land, but to make it a good hunt for both parties, and like I say, it's not like you're going to have guys feel like they're getting cheated out of a buck that they feel like, you know, it should be on public land. I think it'll be better this way with how it is.
And how many acres are in a section?
740. So, what, 3,200 right around there?
Yeah. I think the private land makes up 19,200 acres. It's a big chunk. It's a big piece of land.
Can I add something to that? With the inclusion of any public land into a CWMU, the public, by rule, is compensated by either permits or a comparable hunting opportunity. So they, by including that public land, there's an additional 2 or 3 public permits.
There's going to be a 70-30 split instead of a 80-20 or 90-10 split. Okay. And so the, what do you call yourself? West Willow Creek CWU is willing to give an additional public permit to make up for that compensation too.
What's that done as an additional percentage of permits comparable to the percentage of land that's public land that's included in that CWMU?
And the permits allocated to that CWMU, will that be in comparison to what's already allocated for that unit, or will it be an addition?
No, it'll, like the Landowner Association permits and stuff like that, we take those out of the public.
And then they just pool together and get divided that way.
Yep.
They all come out of the same pool.
Yeah. And like I say, it's a pretty good show of good faith, you know, them giving an extra tag for that public land.
Another question by the rack.
On this West Willow Creek, is that right? It's only for deer, so the elk.
It's deer and pronghorn.
Deer and pronghorn.
Sorry, that's like I say. I think I had a metal block against pronghorn when I put this together because I left almost all the pronghorn off. So, but it is deer and pronghorn.
So is the map? Is this agency? What would you consider this area?
You have a map, but
I do have a map. If you'd like to look at it.
Yeah, that's. I apologize for not.
That question.
Sorry.
He asked if it was what area? West Willow.
Agency
draw.
Yeah, agency draw. Sorry, it takes in part of Little Pack and borders some of the tribal ground out there too. Greens draw. Yep.
And I think it's for the
Johnson's Draw. Yeah, all that West Desert stuff out there in the Book Cliffs.
How is the map managed for elk?
Sorry?
How is it managed for elk? Is it open to the public for elk, or is it just closed during the elk season where it's not an elk CWMU? How does that work?
It would be, the public lands would be open for elk. But the private lands, unless they voluntarily open it up, would be closed. It's up to the owners of the property. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just for the permit split on this, they have 10, they're requesting 10 deer permits, and the split would be 7 private and 3 public. Normally with a 90-10 split without the public lands, it would be a 9-1 split, so it's a 7-3. And so the public is basically getting an extra 2 permits out of this because of the inclusion of public lands.
Is patrolling these type of areas a difficult thing as far as with fencing and those type of issues? I mean, do you see that as a problem?
Absolutely. If the public land is not included in that, with the county roads that pass through the property and everything like that, the amount of access, it would be a nightmare to try and fence and post excluding that. And that's why, you know, one good solid block, I think everybody would be treated very fairly that way. And it would also definitely lighten the burden on our law enforcement officers as far as patrolling and enforcing that kind of a boundary.
So crossing Welland Creek, you put a sign up entering CWMU's back.
Yeah, the signage is really extensive. You want to talk about the...
Yeah, anytime that public lands are included to make a boundary like that, there's a different posting requirement. It has to be every 300 yards instead of property corners, so there's more of an extensive posting requirement for the public properties in there.
And do they fall under different season dates as well? Because some of the season dates seem to be pretty long as far as deer.
Well, they would fall CWMUs. under the general season dates for the CWMU, and what they've requested on this. Excuse me, I'll have to look it up here, but for the deer, they would, pronghorn is the same on any of them, but it's September 1st through October 31st. What they've requested for a season date, which is within the rule, I mean, they have a maximum minimum, they have a 61-day season, and it would begin, what they've requested to start is September 11th and go to November 10th on that unit.
Other questions by the right?
I'm sorry, I'm taking up a lot of time. So with this, if 10 permits go in, are they issued to the CWMU on a voucher and then they allow hunting, and 3 of them go into point system? Is that how this works?
3 of them go through the public draw, just like drawing any public entry, limited entry permit. And 7 of them would be issued to the CWMU as a voucher that they can sell or they can give to somebody, use themselves, whatever they would like to do.
Other questions? Okay. Questions by the public? Please step up to the mic here and state your name.
I'm Jed Olson. I'm doing the flight for this. The Mountain Muley CWMU. I'd like just to kind of take a minute and kind of explain why I disagree, why they denied it. So kind of give you a little bit of the background on me.
These are just questions now.
Questions?
Yeah, just you got a question for it?
My question is why the division thinks it doesn't consist as a good hunting unit. That's my question.
Okay. If you want to bring a comment later, fill out one of these cards, we'll bring it up for comment. Okay.
Dax, do you want to tackle this? I can say from the division, from a program standpoint, but I probably should defer some of the details to Dax here. But what we look for in hunting units, and we have tried. This wasn't started out this way at the beginning of the program in 1990, but we put wording into the rule that we want to have clearly definable boundaries and. And we want to have boundaries that constitute a good unit. So if a public hunter is in there, he's you know, large blocks of lands with uncomplicated boundaries, basically, is what we feel is a make up good hunting units for the public on the outside's sake and the hunters on the inside also. So
yeah, it's really that, you know, when we look at a boundary like this.
you're looking at, you know, a lot, when we set up our hunting unit boundaries, most of the time we're trying to go with something that is, you know, a major terrain feature, or, you know, a road or a river, you know, something that is easy for people so they don't make mistakes. When you've got just fence lines, you got multiple fence lines through different fields, and one of them's part of a CWMU, one of them's not, you know, some of that, you know, maybe you can work with, but on a boundary that's this complex, I mean, if you looked at the actual perimeter of the CWMU compared to the size of the CWMU, you know, it's just, it's one we consulted with our law enforcement folks as well, and just felt like there's going to be issues, there's going to be complications, people are going to be confused, you've got, you know, donut holes and little, you know, things jutting in and out. And like Scott said, that's what we look for, is trying to find contiguous blocks that make for a good, clear boundary where we're not setting a hunter on the CWMU up to make a mistake, and we're not setting the public up to where they make a mistake and hunt on some. We don't want anyone to inadvertently hunt somewhere they're not supposed to hunt. So that, you know, that's the stuff that we look at when we look at a boundary like this.
Thanks, Dex. Any other questions from the public?
My name is Lynn Bowler. I'm also on the application, and I appreciate very much the explanation tonight. That helps me. This is a new process for me, and I appreciate the time and effort that you've all put in helping us. The question I have tonight is, what suggestions would you have to make this a better application as we stand here? I know, obviously, there's a boundary issue, and that's certainly understandable, I think, from the way you've explained it tonight. But as from your perspective, how would you suggest that we go about making it a no-brainer, if you would? It certainly appears like this is a program that you want to enhance and want to do throughout the state, and we'd like to be a part of that.
Okay. Well, and appreciate that. And I guess when you look at the map on here, the complexity of the boundary of this, you've got slivers of land that jet out. I mean, if you can, what I say is what we look at is blocks of land, you know, where it's clearly definable by the public. We've got pieces interior that you can't hunt. You've got, and granted, this is just under 6,000 acres here, and so it's hard to reference, you know, the size of the property here, but you've got major pieces of land that are connected by just 40-acre parcels and things like that. And so, you know, if you're going to hunt a unit, usually you like to hunt a block of land and not something that's so chopped up. So I guess my suggestion would be is to work with having this so that it is more contiguous. It is contiguous, but larger pieces where you don't have all the cutouts, and, you know, work with the surrounding landowners. If there's public property that meets the requirements, you can't use it to make up the minimum of acreage, but according to the rule change that we're proposing, but you know, to block the land up so that it's easily identifiable. Like Dax said, we don't want units to where the public on the outside has a hard time determining where they can hunt, and the public hunters and the private hunters on the inside have a hard time finding out where they can hunt. You know, thin slivers of land really don't work all that well, especially for adjoining properties. So that would be my suggestion.
Thank you for that. Are fences considered a good, solid boundary, a well-marked fence?
Yeah, fences make good boundaries. Yeah.
Great. In this case, we have a fence around the entire parcel, and so that's why I asked. Right. There isn't a piece that's not fenced that we can't mark clearly for both hunters inside and hunters outside. So that's why I wonder. Also, the question is, we have fields right now with 100 deer and no ability to move them out of there because the doe tags have ended at the end of October. And so as a landowner, we're being impacted. That's one of the primary concerns that I had and why I even wanted to be a part of this. And so the other question I would have is, what remedies do we have at this point so that our cows can have a feed instead of having literally hundreds of deer sitting in our alfalfa fields right now eating that vegetation?
what this would fall under is our depredation program. If you're not in a CWMU, well, even if you're in a CWMU, that would fall under depredation. And whether it comes in the form of a monetary compensation or action by the division, it might be designing a hunt, a late season hunt, if the landowner desires the animals to be off those properties. You know, we can work with the region to design hunts to remove those off the property if it's having an impact on you. So that's probably one of the better remedies to do. We can do hunts with even that aren't published in a proclamation. We can do emergency type hunts where to address this kind of things with a hunter depredation pool, or you know, long term we can design hunts if that's the desire of the private landowners to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the public? Well, we got some comments. Lynn, have you got more comments you'd like that you for good?
Yes, sir.
How about you, Jed? Have you got one?
Yeah, I'd like to comment a little bit. Just to kind of go over a little bit of the ground and kind of so you guys kind of understand why I'm applying for the unit. I grew up in Manila, ranching. I worked for my dad my whole life. When I got married, I had to kind of do something different to kind of be able to stay in the town of Manila. Probably about 2008 is when I started allowing people to start to come access and hunt on my dad's property. And then from there, I've kind of picked up some adjoining landowners. And I just kind of feel like this would make a good unit to kind of go over the unit. It has a fence line all the way around it. You'd actually have to cross a fence to enter into the property or the CWMU into someone's private ground. There's one section up in the corner that's not fenced. I'm willing to work with the division. If that's a concern, I will take that section of ground out. So it would have clear boundaries. I kind of feel like everyone in the area understand where people's private ground is, and they would know what's a CWMU and not by understanding whose ground is signed up in it. And also kind of go with what he said. For some reason, this might not have been that big, but I kind of feel like it's kind of big country once you get over there. And you're there, you know, some of these spots that don't look that big when you're there. They're bigger, and it is bigger than it looks like on the map. I've ran a Cal-El cooperative hunt with the division since 2012 with four different ranches where I manage over 40 elk a year, you know, being harvested through depredation hunts, and have not had a problem with the boundaries or harvesting the elk on private ground. So I just disagree that it doesn't have good boundaries. I feel it does have good boundaries because it's all fenced. So that's just my comments.
I got a question before he says that.
Okay.
What's all this bad boy stuff?
Okay, so go over the bad boy stuff. So I mentioned that I'm a country boy. 2008, me and my buddy, we went out elk hunting without a wearing gun. And we got a violation for not wearing one. So I shot it out, and I was a bad boy by not wearing an orange, so I apologize for that. Last year, I received a trapping violation ticket. I've been trapping since I was a sophomore in high school, and I acquired probably about 100 traps. And when you trap, you have to mark your traps with an identification number so the division knows who's out trapping. Well, last year, I was negligent on a few of my traps. I didn't have that number on traps. I marked them, but obviously I didn't have them all marked because they found some. When they checked my lines, they didn't have the numbers on it. So those are my violations. There would be, I believe, there would be Circle Bar Ranch, the Neff Ranch, Broadbent LLC, and Birch Springs LLC. So I believe four or five landowners. I think there's a couple. No, I think that's it. Just four landowners. And as of right now, I lease all of their hunting rights, and I run hunting rights on their block and have hunting rights for the last couple of years.
That's part of what we're
one way. So
you're not a clean one owner like the rest of us, right?
No. Any other questions on?
I have a quick question. I'm just looking at it, and to me, there's that big section right kind of in the middle top.
Can I go over there?
Yeah.
This section in the
it's all in the green, yeah.
Okay, so this is basically the Pallison Ranch, which would be Donald Pallison owns this part and Boyd owns this part. Boyd Pallison already runs kind of a hunting. He already does kind of hunting stuff here. He doesn't do it very much anymore, but he still kind of runs that. And they didn't want to be part of the program. Okay. So it's just two landowners that are kind of right there that didn't want to be involved. And then right here's Dale. So that's why that was not. He wouldn't sign up for it.
Next question I had is because you talked about it all being fenced and they mark it, how often would you mark? Because they mentioned on public ground it has to be every 300 yards. You know, would you be willing to mark it that much or?
I'd mark it however much you want. Marking and posting is not a problem for me. On every post if you like.
Okay. Well, cultivated ground doesn't have to be marked.
What's the rule on posting these dogs?
The rule on posting basically for the private lands is the same as our trespass rule. It's all property corners, gates, right-of-ways into the property, fishing stream crossings, and maybe law enforcement can help. I've been out of it for a little while. But, we also have... One of the recommendations on this partially came from our law enforcement. If you need to address them, that you're welcome to do that. But basically, we have it's in the best interest of the CWMU to post it more than adequately, you know, on all the property corners. And obviously, there's a lot of corners on this, so. Basically, any roadway going into it, fishing stream crossings, right-of-ways through the property, gates or right-of-ways into the property, so and property corners. So that's the minimum posting requirement for it.
Thank you.
I have a question. So Mr. Olson had said that they run elk management hunts. So what's the difference between the CWMU and the elk management hunts that they run?
I'm not familiar with what he's done.
I think he's just talking about mitigation vouchers for elk.
Like depredation.
Yeah, I imagine what he's done is he's signed up multiple landowners. And
So it's just basically four landowners that we've signed up that in the past, if you receive a voucher for Circle Bar Ranch, you can only kill that elk on Circle Bar Ranch. But to where I signed up a bunch of different landowners because the elk move between all the properties, no matter what voucher you have, if you've got a Circle Bar Ranch or an FL tag, you can basically kill that elk no matter where it's at. So it's that program that I signed up to.
Okay, comments by the rack.
Yeah, I wanted to take a couple of minutes and just address the RAC committee and the audience and the wildlife people here. I've known Jed for about 10 years. Jed's a good citizen of Daggett County, and he's not a schmuck. He's
probably
not for wearing his Carhartts instead of his orange hat or whatever. They were on private property. That doesn't mitigate the fact that you have to have hunter orange, and I'm not going to excuse that behavior. I support the wildlife people in this denial. I want you to know that. But at the same time, I think that it's incumbent of us to create a path for Jed to to get to where he wants to go. Now, currently, he has all this land tied up anyway, and it's already an enforcement nightmare. I think by giving him a CWMU, it would actually be better in the long run. There's probably a lot more animals get killed on his on these properties now than would if it was turned into a CWMU. And I think from an enforcement standpoint, I think it would make more sense to turn it into a CWMU. Most of this frontage is bordered by the highway. The highway goes right up through it, and so the signage is easy. It's already impossible to trespass on it. It's well marked, and so I think it could be worked out so that the property boundaries were very distinguishable. And I think going forward, I would like to see the recommendation from this committee be, let's go back to the drawing board, give Jed a way to be repentant, if you will, for his violations, and maybe do some public service or whatever to get beyond that, and give him a way to get this thing marked and go that way. I just feel like it would be a good program in the long run. It's already a nightmare, so I don't think it could be any worse being a CWMU. And it also surrounds a lot of state ground. All of that blue stuff is state ground. And I think having the private be a CWMU would actually enhance the hunting on the private. It would create bigger bucks and whatever that would wander off into the state ground. So I just want to put in a word that Jed's a good citizen of Daggett County, and I believe that this could work in the future. Not now, but going forward. So.
Thank you for that comment. I appreciate that.
Sure, you made the comment about maybe if this was a CWMU to kill Lester, you think there's some...
Not illegally, but Jed has all of this ground tied up now, and he allows hunters on it now. If it was a CMU, I mean...
Maybe less permits.
He's put in for 10 permits for this area, and right now there's probably, I don't know, but I'll bet there's more than 10 deer get killed on that property now. So I think in the long run you'd have bigger bucks and easier management from the standpoint of law enforcement.
That's 10 deer and I believe 6 pronghorn also is what he's applied for.
But basically what this does, it gives him a little, some resources for depredation, and it will allow public hunters to come in. So that's 2 more advantages to it.
Any other discussion by the